using free speech to free minds. You're listening to The David Knight Show.
As the clock strikes 13, it's Thursday, the 29th of July, year of our Lord, 2021, day 502 of America Held Hostage. Well, today we're going to take a look at the follow-ups of the masks and the mandates, and we've got a lot of people, including some conservative writers, some liberal writers, who are saying, what are they telling us? We can't figure this out. This doesn't make any sense. Yeah, exactly. And we have Lawrence Kudlow saying we've got to get Trump back on Twitter so he can sell the vaccines. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Right on this day 502 of America Held Hostage, as we're getting ready to head back in. I said from the very beginning, didn't I? Yeah, they're going to turn this on and off like a switch. As people started celebrating, hey, it's over. I said, no, you're on parole. They have still turned your life into a privilege that they will grant to you on condition. And it doesn't matter what the current condition is, because there'll be other conditions that happen as well. And we're going to take a look at what's going on in the hospitals. Far more evidence to show that what this really is financially incentivized medical malpractice. That's what we have a pandemic of. We have a pandemic of that, of political corruption, of crony capitalism. We have a pandemic of people who are out of control in terms of rebellion against the lawful authority that they swore to abide by. That is the Constitution. Before we get into that, I want to cover some of the headline news. This, I thought, was amazing. This is Remington has reached a negotiated settlement with 10 of the Sandy Hook families. $33 million. So they're going to get a little over $3 million each. And what did Remington do? Well, they made the gun. And so this is akin, folks, to a drunk driver killing a family and Ford being sued, or a situation where you've gotten, and we've had these situations before, where you have a terrorist who has decided that they want to take out a crowd of people, get in a car and use a car to run down the crowd. So you sue the car company, right? The reason you do that is because the car company or the gun company in this particular case has deeper pockets, but it's not just about money. There's a much bigger, deeper agenda behind all of the Sandy Hook stuff. And they admit that. The plaintiff said many of the families, only 9 of the families joined the lawsuit. Many of them joined for political reasons, they said. That's what this is really about. This is a warning shot, I should say, for some other people who are currently fighting a Sandy Hook lawsuit. White fragility author has ripped comedy as an excuse to be racist. What was I talking about yesterday? And the funny thing is that this is an interview that she did several months ago that just surfaced. Fox News found it. It was a podcast interview that she did. She had a lot of exposure with her White Fragility book last year. And now she's done another book, and it's not selling too well. It only sold 3,500 copies in the first week of publication. It's called Nice Racism. Exactly. And it's interesting that she focuses on nice. Because you remember, that's what a lot of people think all this is really about. John Cleese even said that when he talked about censorship. He said, we just thought we were being nice to people at the beginning, but now they're using this as a club to destroy all comedy. Yes, that's what it was always about. It was never about being nice to anybody. It was always about them controlling and shutting down speech. because the people who identify themselves as politically correct are nothing other than Marxists. That was always a Marxist term. Political correctness doesn't have anything to do with race or gender or any of that other stuff. This is a term that was taken from the Soviet Union. If you said the right things about the right people, you were politically correct. If you didn't, you were politically incorrect, and it's off to the gulag. And so this author, Robin DiAngelo, who helped to publicize this, her book in 2020, or actually maybe it was earlier than that, it was 2018, but it really kind of hit after that. White fragility, why it's so hard for white people to talk about racism. Well, it's not hard for her. She's a self-loathing white liberal Marxist who's using this to make a lot of money. Isn't that interesting how the Marxists make so much money? You got people like Bernie Sanders and multiple homes. You got Patrice Cullors, self-professed, self-trained, or not self-trained, but she's a trained Marxist. She professed that she was. And they're winding up with these multi-million dollar homes, and many of them. Comedy, she said, is, I think, an excuse to be racist. This is exactly what I was saying yesterday. This is where these people are in the EU. That's why I spent a lot of time on this yesterday. They're humorless. They're clueless, petty tyrants. Remember yesterday, I went over and I spent about 20 minutes talking about this. I said, you got to explain the meme, what a meme is to these people. And you have to explain the jokes within the memes to these people. You know, they didn't get any of this stuff. These are the people who are going to be the practitioners, the executors of censorship. They were explaining to them what memes were and what it means to be red-pilled and all this other stuff. She goes on to say, I think TV shows like Family Guy, South Park, and The Simpsons allowed white people to be racist self-consciously, right? As WND points out, she is a self-flagellating white apologist. She got the Monty Python thing where they're walking in a in a circle and beating themselves with a... she's become rich and famous by berating white people about their supposed white privilege and their oppressor status. She says, anybody who makes a joke about black people is punching down. So it's okay to make jokes and ridicule white people, but you can't make jokes categorically. Cannot make jokes about black people because you would be punching down. And she said, there's a concept in comedy called punching up, not down. So I guess she kind of reminds me of the tail end of the The Incredibles, I should say, where you have the underminer who comes out, right? You know, I am the underminer. No one is beneath me. but I am beneath you, but no one is beneath me, as he says. So imagine thinking to yourself, says Seth Dillon, who writes for the Babylon Bee, imagine thinking to yourself, I can't joke about these people because they're beneath me. That's essentially what she's saying. She is the underminer of society. Nothing is beneath me. So she's got a lot of one-star reviews as well on her latest book, A White Grifter, peddling unproven attention, seeking nonsense about race for her own personal financial gain. It doesn't get any more oppressive or exploitative than that. Another one says, has there been anyone else, white or black, who has capitalized so much on white guilt? And I would say on racism, as a matter of fact. And then there's the appointees for the Biden administration. We have David Chipman, for example. There's an interview that has surfaced about David Chipman. And you know, every time I look at this guy, he is just over the top. Pull up the pictures of David Chipman there, Travis. The Biden ATF nominee, the guy who has spent most of his life working in Bloomberg organizations to try to get rid of guns, he really does look like Biff from Back to the Future. Look at that. McFly, hello. Is the mic on? In 2019, he appeared on the BBC to attack President Trump and gun owners. And listen to what he had to say. He said the frustration in the United States is the freedom of speech to say things is largely not regulated and cannot be regulated. That's his frustration. that he can't regulate the First Amendment so that he can take away your Second Amendment. And as a matter of fact, he goes on to say that if you say something that he deems to be hateful, maybe you make a joke or meme or something, right? That's hateful. You know, comedy is hateful to these people. They send in the Spanish Inquisition, and they take your weapons. He goes on to say, we have to do more to monitor hate speech on the Internet, but we also have to do more to curb that same speech being presented by our president and other elected public officials. The FBI and other federal agents have a tough job responding to these threats when they don't. Listen, here's the money quote. They have a hard time responding to these threats when they don't currently have the authority to remove weaponry just because people are saying hateful things. So he wants the authority to take away guns because you are saying things that he thinks are hateful. You understand? That's exactly what he is saying. So there will be no comedians with guns because they could be shooting their mouth off. But this guy, sneering in every picture, just like Biff, and he tweeted this out back in August of 2019. He was proud of what he had to say. The BBC wanted to know if the president's response to this weekend's mass shooting was adequate. I was able to answer that question. No, it's not, because we need to suspend the First Amendment as well as the Second Amendment. In other words, this guy, who, if he gets confirmed by the Senate, will be taking an oath to the Constitution, and he's already done that because he's been in the ATF prior to becoming a gun control go-to guy. But he'll be taking an oath to the Constitution that he seeks to overthrow. Every aspect of it. Every aspect of it. None of it. Spokesman for the National Shooting Sports Foundation. So the video makes it clear that he sees our God-given liberties of free speech as a frustration. And he feels it necessary to curb not one, but two rights that are protected by the Constitution. God-given rights, by the way. This article comes from neonnettle.com. And then we have another appointment into the another troublesome appointment by the Biden administration. And this is the eco-terrorist that he wants to put in charge of the BLM, the Bureau of Land Management. That BLM. Tracy Stone Manning. Her nomination was previously stuck in committee after a tied vote, but on Tuesday, the Senate split down party lines 50-49, with every Democrat voting in favor of advancing her to the nomination. So they stuck her in committee. It was tied 10-10. They couldn't get it out of the Senate committee to get it to the floor. So they went through a procedure to do that. And they were one vote ahead because I guess some Republican didn't show up or didn't vote. But even if they had and it had been 50-50, you would have had Kamala come in and break the tie. How did we get to a 50-50 tie? Oh, that's right. After the election that Trump locked down to make sure that we would have mail-in corruption and every type of corruption you can imagine. After that election, Trump and the Republican Party did nothing but fundraise for themselves. They didn't do anything for that Georgia election where you had in one state the balance of the Senate. They only had to win one seat. In order to win one seat, they needed to put pressure on the Republican governor and the Republican state legislature to do something in that 60 or 70 day window before they had that runoff election to make sure they didn't turn over the Senate. But they did, because that's really what this was about. They threw the election. It wasn't stolen. They gave it away because they want this to go to the next step. The Republicans didn't want to take it, be blamed for taking it to the next step. If they took it to the next step, to do incrementally more, as Biden is doing, than Trump did, then it would kind of blow their cover. People would realize what they're really about. I realize what they're really about. You realize what they're really about. But the MAGA people, who still think the solution to saving America is to make America Trump again, some of them might even have realized at that point that the Republicans stayed in and continued down the path that their globalist masters want them to do. So it was time for them to step aside, give the Democrats time to go ahead, and they can sit on the sidelines and carp about it and do nothing to stop it. My hands are tied. We're in the minority because, you know, we didn't do anything in Georgia. To give you an idea, and I've talked about this lady before, Tracy Stone Manning. She was involved literally with ecoterrorism when they would go in and spike trees in 1989. She was involved in that. And she also wrote a, and this is even more troubling in my opinion, she wrote her graduate thesis calling for population control to protect the environment. That's the kind of radical eco-terrorist she is, because that's really where the radical environmentalism comes from. I point out that many times. If you look at these people, and here they keep talking, or you keep hearing all these Hollywood New Age types talking about Mother Earth. Mother Earth is upset, not because we ate margarine instead of butter or whatever, right? But because we got global warming going on, so Mother Earth is sending hurricanes out to get us and all this kind of, this type of pagan projection, anthropomorphism, imagining that the Earth is a sentient being. I've seen this, as I've said many times, I've got it on a recording somewhere, I just can't find my tape, but someday I'm going to show it to you. I videotaped it. We were at the Children's Museum in London in 2001 when my kids were children. And they had this prop. We took them up to the third floor, I think it was, where they could play freely for a while. They were getting kind of burned out of being in museums. And they had a nonstop propaganda film that was running there talking about Gaia and how it was that Mother Earth is a sentient being and humans are a virus. And if we don't stop this human virus, or at least get it under control by depopulation, then the human virus is going to kill Mother Earth. She also once touted her husband's suggestion to let houses catch caught in forest fires. Just let them burn. We want to get rid of these. We hate houses. We hate humans. We have Republicans, while we're still in Washington, talking about what is happening there. Republicans are being told that to prepare to vote for this bill that's coming up, this big infrastructure bill. It doesn't even exist yet. They're not going to have much time to read it. You know, this has become standard operating procedure, and it something that began with Pelosi, as Breitbart points out, you know, they're going to have to pass it to find out what's in it. Well, Pelosi was the first one to do that. But then when the Republicans took over from her, Paul Ryan and others, they did the same thing. This has now become standard operating procedure for both political parties to put out bills that are thousands of pages long and written in very dense legalese. And tell everybody, well, you got 2 hours to look at this, and then we're going to have a vote. Vote up or vote down. Well, I would always be a down vote if it was a situation like that, but that's not the way that it happens. They continue to pass this on. So think about this. We're looking at a bill that, depending on who you talk to, they don't know. I mean, it could be $3 trillion, $3.5 trillion. Some people peg it at $4.7 trillion. Let's put that in perspective. From 1998, to 2012, the entire annual budget of the federal government fell between $1.3 trillion and $1.8 trillion. They don't even, that's with the range of what this will cost. I mean, there's the uncertainty about what is in this infrastructure bill and what will wind up in there is as big as what the entire federal budget used to be. That's the slop that they have in this, the wiggle room that they have in this. An amount that is equal to what the entire annual budget was for the years between 1998 and 2012. Then you go to 2013 to 2019. We'll skip 2020 because that was a Trump spend-a-thon. But when you go to from 2013 to 2019, the budget ranged on an annual basis between $2 and $3 trillion. So even in recent years' terms, we're talking about something that is more than it's like the annual budget for the years 1998 to 2012. Take one of those years and add it to the years between 2013 and 2019. That's what we're talking about. We're talking about essentially 2 years worth of spending. And they're going to have just a couple of hours to look and see what's in it, which is pretty amazing efficiency, don't you think? I mean, did you ever think that Congress would be able to do a year's worth of work in just a couple of hours? I mean, that is astounding how efficient they've become. Nobody in the history of the world has been able to spend $3.5 to $5 trillion in just a couple of hours. That is one for the record books. It is an accomplishment, quite frankly. Who said that Congress can't get anything done? Ronald Reagan said, people who say that Congress spends money like a drunken sailor are insulting drunken sailors. They couldn't drink that much. So Ron Johnson said, Republican, Wisconsin, if Republicans are cooperative and complicit with this bipartisan bill, the Democrat bill is just going to be backfilled with more long-term entitlements, welfare, liberal, radical wish list spending proposals. As a matter of fact, one organization, as I said, believes that this radical socialist reconciliation bill, they call it, has the potential to go up to $4.7 trillion in total spending. Just this one bill. That's not talking about all the other money that they've already signed on to. So much so, in fact, that you even have a Democrat in Arizona, Senator Kyrsten Sinema, is saying, well, I'm going to not support a bill that costs $3.5 trillion for starters in the coming months. I will work in good faith to develop this legislation with my colleagues and the administration to strengthen Arizona's economy and to help Arizona everyday families to move ahead. She said, and in response, the Democrats got very angry with her. They said, we didn't elect Sinema as president, and we won't let her obstruction put a Republican in the Oval Office in 2024. It's a reconciliation bill. Or the GOP controlling every level of government again, period. Who's that coming from? That's coming from Rashida Tlaib. And if you want Republicans at every level of government, you'll do exactly what she wants. Because that will get the Republicans in. One guy who's going to be spending most of this money and deciding how it's going to be rolled out is Pete Buttigieg. Booty marks. He's very excited about this. I mean, this is a guy who's going to be sitting on the infrastructure bill as the Department of Transportation, and he's going to have between $3 and $5 trillion to do things like destroy roads and bridges. He can put roads on road diets. He can put speed bumps on them, but he can tear down entire overpasses. That's the kind of stuff that's in this bill. So he can completely destroy private transportation. And when we're talking about all this money that is involved there, he and his boyfriend, Chasen, Chasen. They complained about the high prices of living in Washington. They just can't make ends meet. I'm so sorry for them. I mean, you know, they're going to straddle the American public in generations with debt. And, of course, it isn't ever going to be paid back. It'll be part of the Great Reset, the financial reset. They're going to implode the country with debt so that they can push in their central bank digital cash. This is the plan. We know that's the plan. They want to make everybody poor. They want to make sure that we own nothing. We go nowhere. That's why they're going to destroy. They're going to use an infrastructure bill to destroy private transportation. But they're complaining about life in Washington. And has a brother who says that he's lost touch with reality, quote-unquote, if he thinks that they're struggling on an income of hundreds of thousands of dollars. How much money does Buttigieg make at the Department of Transportation? Oh, you know who was there before? Trump put in Mitch McConnell's wife, Elaine Chao. Yeah, a little bit of nepotism there, right? That should keep Mitch on board, and it pretty much did. He kind of held his fire on Trump, as you could see the contempt that he had for Trump, but he kind of held back because, you know, Trump gave his wife a pretty good job. What does someone make in the Department of Transportation? Well, he makes quite a bit. Actually, not as much as Fauci, but, you know, there's other things on the side as well. You know, Fauci makes more than the president does. He makes well over $400,000. Buttigieg's salary is only $221,000, so you can understand why, you know, they're really feeling the pressure, he and his booty. they raked in, however, $800,000 in the past 2 years. They've got book deals, they've got podcasts, university jobs, and then, of course, making money from his presidential run. Meanwhile, Chasen says they cannot afford rent in Washington, D.C. We couldn't afford the one-bedroom plus a den, he said. where rents were advertised at $4,500 a month. Now, how is it that you can't afford $4,500 a month when you're making at least $400,000 a year? He made a big deal out of the fact that he was not a millionaire when he was running for president. And the crowded debates that they had, and again, I look at these debates that they had back in the 2016 cycle. The Republicans, you had, I don't know, what was it, 12, 15 different Republicans. They probably had 20 different Democrats, and they did several debates with that many people on the stage. But, you know, if you have Republicans and Democrats, as we had happening to us all the time back in North Carolina, Republicans, Democrats are on the ballot running for governor. We went through unbelievable expense and bother to try to collect signatures so that we could get on the ballot. And then they said, no, you can't be in the debate. It would be too crowded. It would be chaos to have three people in a debate. Yeah, you know, so when you had two dozen people in the 2020 election cycle on the debate presidential primaries, he said on the stage, he said, you know, according to Forbes magazine, I am literally the only person on this stage who is not a millionaire or billionaire. They could have added, and that's why I'm running. I want to get some of that green stuff. It works out really well for him. His most recent financial filings show that he is now a multimillionaire. He has earned between $800,000 and $1.8 million in the 2 years before he joined the Biden administration. So there you go. $800,000 is on the low side. He's made anywhere from $400,000 to $1 million a year for the last 2 years when you factor in his presidential contributions. And, of course, it's just another Marxist millionaire, because that's really what Buttigieg, he makes a big deal out of his gayness, but what he really is a Marxist, and that's what he doesn't want you to see, his background. I won't go into that again, but just look up, I've talked many times about his father, who built his entire career on the Italian communist that was essentially the founder of the Italian of communism in Italy, and was the inspiration for Sacco and Vanzetti and a lot of other people who were, many Italians were dismissed, many Italian immigrants were dismissed because of the guy that Buttigieg's dad loved so much, because he had a lot of influence. There were a large proportion of immigrant Italians in the early 20th century that were anarchists because they'd been listening to this guy. And you had the Sacco and Vanzetti trial, which was a pushback, regardless of what happened with that. They've become martyrs for the cause. And so Buttigieg's dad sent him to Harvard to study under a fellow Marxist who, because he loved Sacco and Vanzetti so much, he changed his name to Sacvan, his first name, Sacvan Berkovich. So he's published a memoir, The Shortest Way Home. That was in 2019. It brought in up to $1 million in royalties. In October, he published Trust, which came with a $311,000 advance for hosting a podcast series on iHeartRadio called The Deciding Decade. He was paid a minimum guarantee payment of $150,000. He also had a $37,000 salary from Notre Dame and a $111,000 mayoral salary, but they can't make ends meet. They must be doing something pretty extravagant if they can't pay for an apartment. I know apartments are high in Washington, but still. In France, you have fines for Monsanto. And you're saying, wait a minute, Monsanto doesn't exist anymore. That's right. They were bought by Bayer a couple of years ago, $63 billion in 2018. And then Bayer assumed all their legal lawsuits as well, including all of these glyphosate lawsuits. They failed to inform people who they had put on watch lists, which is a crime in France. Not here. I mean, we got every government agency you can imagine has got a watch list. Monsanto looked at politicians and journalists, 1,500 of them, just in the EU. And understand, there's going to be a lot more in the U.S. So 1,500 politicians and journalists just in the EU. And they gave a rating of them from 1 to 5 stars. And did not tell them that they were on a list. And in France, that's a crime. You know, here we've got no-fly lists. We've got all kinds of lists. I wonder, someday, I'm going to take an extended holiday, and I'm going to file a bunch of Freedom of Information requests from corporations and governments to see how many lists I'm on. I can't even imagine how many lists. I'm sure that I'm probably on that Monsanto list because I was a longtime critic of Monsanto. In May, a U.S. judge rejected a $1.25 billion deal proposed by Bayer to settle future cancer lawsuits involving Roundup, saying the agreement would be more beneficial to the German firm than to those who got sick. Isn't that, though, what Johnson & Johnson is allowed to do? I mean, we've seen this from the asbestos industry. We'll just create a shell corporation, we'll put some money in it, and they can have that money that we decide to fund it with, but they can't get to the main corporation. And I still don't understand how Johnson & Johnson is allowed to do that. And they're doing it right now with the baby powder and the opioid cases. They're setting up shell corporations. So even if you win in that lawsuit, then you'll have to go with a separate follow-up lawsuit to try to penetrate that scam corporation. I don't understand how that's legit. You know, if you're in a bankruptcy situation, and of course they're not, you know, they haven't had a judgment against them, and they're certainly not bankrupt because Trump bailed them out. He let them jump out of these industries where they were killing people with talc and baby powder for decades and with opioids. He moved them out and got them into the new burgeoning liability-free business of Trump shots. It's a franchise, isn't it? They had four franchisees get into the Trump shot business. And so he's able to get them in this liability-free area and give them more money than they have right now as liability there. And then they can protect their liability by these types of things because evidently, you know, they haven't gotten the judgments yet. And so they're free to do that kind of crooked stuff. I mean, to me, it looks like somebody restructuring their finances when they've got bankruptcy, a little bit before they get bankruptcy. You know, if you declare bankruptcy, and I know this because I was a creditor who got ripped off because of this very thing. If you restructure your finances a certain number of months before the bankruptcy actually happens, before you even declare bankruptcy, they can still come back and grab that money. So why can't they do that with these guys? Well, again, it's not bankruptcy court, but I mean, the principle that's involved is essentially the same. And, you know, it's not just Buttigieg struggling to make it on $2 million in Washington, D.C. Other Americans are seeing their real wages decline by 2% already because of inflation. And, you know, that's just the tip of the iceberg on this Titanic ship. Because they don't give you honest numbers for inflation. They don't give you honest numbers for unemployment, just like they don't give you honest numbers for COVID pandemics. They rig all of these numbers. They just exclude big ticket items arbitrarily on inflation. So this is rigged. But even if you go with a 2% number, which again is total nonsense, they say even the consumer price index has risen by 5.3% since last June. And so that means that Americans earning $50,000 a year, which is about what the median family income is. It's not the average, but you take half of the people make more than that median income of about 50-something thousand a year, and half of the people make less than that. So if you look at a $50,000 a year, that is an $850 cut in yearly wages. And it's much worse than that because you look at what is going on in the grocery store, in your shopping cart, and it's the inflation, stupid, right? And it's really like a pay cut. That's what I just talked about yesterday. Foundation for Economic Education said, these people who are fighting for $15 an hour minimum wage or more or whatever, do you realize how this is impacting you even more? Because this is like getting 5, 10, 15% pay cut off of where you are. You'd be pretty angry about that, but you're not angry when it's being done by the government through inflation. And it's going to get much worse. As a matter of fact, I had a listener who wrote to me about that. He says, you really need to talk about what is happening to people who are on fixed income. People are on Social Security. I mean, they're not doing anything because Social Security is based on their rigged inflation numbers that are perhaps a tenth of what it really is. And they have a long lag before they even act on that. It's very difficult for people who are on fixed incomes. Stockton, and of course, Stockton, California, is the place where they did the first citywide experiment in universal basic income. They also were, by the way, just prior to that, the first city to declare bankruptcy. So they're not really a model of fiscal responsibility. But they do show that they're on board with everything that the Great Reset people and the UN's 2030 agenda and all these people really want to see happening. They want to make sure, and they had expected that by 2030, that magic number where they're going to have in their society, which will be a dystopia for us and a utopia for them, they wanted to have a situation where there's going to be massive unemployment. Study in South Korea. So do we expect to see 70% unemployment among doctors and lawyers? This is not just people who are working in the transportation industry who are carrying freight or people who are working in retail. This is across the board. And as I've said many times, that is one of the effects of this Trump lockdown 502 days ago that's being ignored. They were talking about it even during the presidential campaign when Bloomberg was in. Remember, he got a lot of flack for criticizing farmers and saying they're stupid. But what he was talking about was the change. If you look at that whole quote, he said, yeah, we used to have a large proportion of our population that grew stuff on the farm, and we replaced them, and then we had people who were working in factories, and we replaced them, and now the smart ones of us are looking how to put both of them out of jobs. Because we're smart and you're not. The elitism that was there in terms of criticizing farmers, and everybody's like, you're criticizing farmers. No, what he was doing was laying out the Great Reset, laying out the UN 2030 agenda. Yeah, it's an elitist attitude. But he was talking about changing from the Industrial Revolution, changing from the agrarian society, and what they're doing right now. So it's always been the plan to have massive unemployment, 50 to 70% across every industry, horizontally. And from top to bottom, I mean, we're not just talking about entry-level people being replaced with automation. No, with artificial intelligence and robotics and all the rest of this stuff, they seek to replace jobs everywhere, top to bottom and across all industries at the same time. That kind of massive disruption, as Bloomberg said, we're very smart, we're going to replace all these people. We just have to figure out how to keep them from coming after us with guillotines. That's what he said. And that's the quote that nobody paid any attention to. I just can't believe it. And how do you keep people from coming after you with guillotines? Well, you kill them first, or you cripple them first with a vaccine that you put out in a pandemic. You also shift the blame. If you're going to get rid of employees, you don't want people to blame you. So what do? Well, that's what we're seeing right now. First, you lock down industries and you get everybody afraid of humans, and you don't want any filthy humans cooking your food or delivering your food or taking your order at a restaurant. So we're going to start automating things. In the kitchen, we'll even start automating the delivery of food and the taking of orders. So we can cut the employees. And it's not us. It's not that we're greedy, elitist billionaires like Michael Bloomberg. No, we had to do this because, you know, filthy humans and disease and all that stuff. And then the next step is that you pay people to stay home. You pacify them. That's what universal basic income is, and that's what the stimulus is, and that's what the extended unemployment benefits all are. It's pacifying people, making them dependent on a handout. You're hand-feeding people to make them your lapdog. And we've had pets. All of us have pets. You know? So anyway, when we got Scout, he was pretty wired as a border collie. He was ripping my hands up with those puppy teeth, and he was bouncing off the wall, a lot of energy, especially for us. Pacified him by giving him things to play with. We turned him into a ball dog, and then we gave him treats and stuff like that. And you pacify, you know, I can train him to do anything with the treats. And they're training you with treats. They might call them PPP. they might call it a stimulus. They might call it extended unemployment benefits. They will eventually call it universal basic income. And so now you see in Stockton where they've been working on universal basic income, they're talking about the fact that they've got an employee shortage. Why do you have an employee shortage? Well, because Biden is paying everybody to stay at home. So they create fear so that you don't want to see people working there. They put regulations on the employees where they have to wear masks and do all other kinds of stuff, so they don't want to go to a job. They hate their job. The only reason they would do it is for the money, and the money's not that great, and they can make more money staying at home from Biden with extended unemployment benefits. So they're not incentivized to work. There's nothing that they want to do in that. And you don't want them there because they're filthy humans. And so there we are. They were able to do it, and they didn't have to have people get angry with them and come after them with a guillotine. Stockton restaurant hires a robot as employee shortage takes its toll. It's just exhausting. We can't do it. It makes sense for us right now because of the shortage of employees. This is the only solution that we can find. The diseased humans are too expensive. Nobody wants them, and the government is paying them to stay home. We will be right back. Stay with us.
Common Man. They created Common Core to dumb down our children. They created Common Pass to track and control us. Their Commons Project to make sure the commoners own nothing. And the communist future. They see the common man as simple, unsophisticated, ordinary. But each of us has worth and dignity created in the image of God. That is what we have in common. That is what they want to take away. Their most powerful weapons are isolation, deception, intimidation. They desire to know everything about us while they hide everything from us. It's time to turn that around and expose what they want to hide. Please share the information and links you'll find at thedavidknightshow.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. If you can't support us financially, please keep us in your prayers. TheDavidKnightShow.com.
Hear news now at APSRadioNews.com or get the APS Radio app and never miss another story.
All right, and let's take a look at January the 6th. You know, last night I was on with Clive Lewis. I'm surprised that I'm able to do the show today. It was a late night for me. I didn't get to bed till midnight last night. So, as we talked about censorship and as we talked about the globalist plan that is rolling out from China, in the last segment, we talked a little bit about what's happening with January the 6th, and he got an email from somebody listening to the show and said, I'm sick and tired of all this partisan stuff. You know, you guys wanted to lock up Hillary, and you want to lock up BLM and Antifa, and you are concerned about the fact, as we'd mentioned, the fact that you have these officials now who are saying these people are our political enemies, who tell you false things, according to us, those people are terrorists. We're going to call them terrorists now. And so I pointed out, I said, well, you know, the reality is that we don't want to make the mistake of saying that our guy is not as bad as the other person. You know, it's not simply about punishing the other side. I said, we have a higher standard here that's called the Constitution, right? They're supposed to obey the Constitution. And that's the fundamental thing that you should be worried about. And that's really what Clyde Lewis was talking about. And by the way, the aftermath.fm is something that he put together, and he put it together simply because he's concerned about censorship, wanting to have something that is off to the side. It's kind of like what Adam Curry has done with his Value for Value network with podcasts, setting up their own system, their own servers and things like that, so they cannot be taken down. And so that's very important. It's one of the reasons why I wanted to be a part of the Aftermath.fm thing. But anyway, when you talk about this, understand that it's not just the unequal justice, the fact that you've got BLM and Antifa running riots throughout the country, burning buildings down, all this sort of thing, and getting away with it. It's not just that you have a black congresswoman who is head of the Black Caucus going in and invading the Senate building. She's a congresswoman from the House. So she goes in and tries to interrupt. Her purpose was to interrupt the Senate. And so they have a demonstration. Now, it was peaceful. You know, she didn't hit any officers with her handbag or throw out any racial epithets that I'm aware of. They arrested her, but then they immediately released her. And so there's a different standard here. You know, what we're seeing now is that people who did far less violence, and again, it doesn't matter. You punish people based on what they did. I don't think it should be a crime for somebody to walk into a public building that when they're not told that they can't come in, when the police officers let them in, and that's the case for the vast majority of these people who they're now coming after with criminal charges. There are a few people, as I said many times, a tiny, tiny minority of the people that were there on January the 6th went to the Capitol building. And a tiny, tiny, tiny minority of those people got violent to open up the doors. And then there were some other people who got let in. They didn't even know what they were doing. And now they're looking at felony charges and ridiculous prison sentences, destruction of their life. And so we have to be concerned that our government doesn't become a terrorist. That's why we always have the high standards. Even when it's very clear that somebody is guilty, you still give them due process. I mean, you could catch somebody with a smoking gun in their hand, standing over a dead body, and you still need to have a trial, a due process trial. And part of that is a speedy trial. Part of that is that you do not give them excessive punishment. And a big part of that is that you do not punish them before they even get a trial, which is what's happening right now. And that ought to concern everybody. The fact that the Democrats are openly talking about this as being based on coming after their political enemies and calling their political enemies terrorists. And you should be concerned about this whether you are conservative or liberal, or whether you're a Republican or Democrat, because let me tell you, once we establish this type of behavior, then the other side's going to use it as well. And that's what we're hearing. Oh, well, you know, you didn't do this with that one, and so, or you tried to do this with that one, and so we should be able to do that to you. Well, you understand how that's going to come back, right? The Republicans will bite on that as well, and they will say, well, you know, we will declare Democrats to be political enemies, and we'll do an an investigation of everybody there, right? It's not an insurrection. It's a inquisition is really what this is. I liked the satire that was on Revolver. He said, in a desperate bid to alleviate their plight, Trump supporters, who are still being tormented in prison for months, are identifying as Cubans in the hopes that Republican lawmakers will finally care about them. That's exactly what's happening here. These people are completely ignored by the Republicans. Republicans are scared to death to talk about due process when it comes to these, because they don't want to be labeled. They don't want to be tarred as insurrectionists, as terrorists. So they're running scared. Just like Alex. Had a 43-year-old flooring contractor, Dominic Pozzola. I don't think this is real. He's got several of these cases here. I think this is satire along the lines of Babylon Bee. Well, let's just go with his article here on Revolver. Had 43-year-old flooring contractor Dominic Pozzola broken the window of an American small business last summer to let in looters, he might have received a token charge or even been heralded as a crusader for racial justice. Instead, the New Yorker broke a window at the U.S. Capitol. Even though the New Yorker did nothing else other than smoke a cigar, he spent 6 months in 23-hour-a-day solitary confinement. Pozzola has been denied bail twice, has been kept away from his 60-year-old daughter, and unable to support his family, for which he was previously the sole breadwinner. And if this is not an actual person, we've seen the same type of thing with person after person. This is what's happening to them. So he says, despite Marco Rubio's tweeting over and over about political prisoners in Venezuela and Cuba, a letter sent to Marco Rubio's office was returned unopened, with flecks of foam still visible on it, says his satire. That was when Pozzola had a brilliant idea. He said, I finally decided to embrace who I truly am on the inside. I am now Domingo Sanchez, proud Cuban dissident. So now Pozzola Sanchez's new identity quickly generated newfound interest from Senator Rubio. I mean, why not? You know, you got a couple of trends here. It's trendy and cool to be on the side of Cubans who are fighting a dictatorship in Cuba. And it is. It is always cool to side with people who are fighting communism. But we can also merge this in with the identification movements, right? I identify now as Cuban. Why not? Domingo is the exact kind of prisoner whose rights America must care the most about, said Rubio. And by that, I mean he is not an American prisoner. Eduardo, and another example here, Edward Lang, who then changed his name to Eduardo, changed his hometown also from Newburgh, New York, to Havana, Cuba, to get Senator Ted Cruz interested in his case. And then Cruz, who had ignored him previously, said, Martin Luther King Jr. once wrote that injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere. But he wasn't quite right. It's only injustice outside of America that matters. And so now I am interested in Eduardo. You get the idea, right? You know, I didn't have a chance to say it last night, but when we look at this, I look at a situation. It's not just the trumped-up charges. It's not just the fact that the black congressional caucus can do the same thing, and they're heroes. It's not the idea that BLM and Antifa can do much worse for a much longer period of time and escape any punishment. So it's not just that unequal justice that's being applied there, that hypocrisy. But it's also what is happening to the rule of law. You know, when you look at Eric Garner, who was choked to death because he was selling individual cigarettes on the streets of New York to escape attacks. They call them loosies. They sell loose individual cigarettes to avoid the tax. Well, you know, I'm not a smoker. I'm not a street vendor. I'm not a black man who lives in New York. I wouldn't even go near New York. But when I look at that, it bothers me. Because I understand that even if I'm not in New York, and even if I'm not selling cigarettes or smoking cigarettes or black or any of this stuff, when we have a situation where the government can go over the top with excessive punishment, I'm concerned and outraged by that, and I understand that eventually could happen to me. And that's why I think it's beyond idiotic that these liberals who are out there cheering all this stuff and using this for political advantage, and all the Democrat followers of Pelosi, all the Hollywood elites, they're just wallowing in all of this. They don't understand how this is going to come back to bite them. We want to have a system of laws, not of dictators. We want to have restrictions on what the government can do. Nothing is more dangerous than to take that away. And that is what's happening right now. They're using this as a reign of political terror. You want to talk about who's actually trying to destroy democracy? That's the people running these show trials. Liz Cheney called Kevin McCarthy childish for saying that she and Adam Kinzinger were Pelosi Republicans. Well, they absolutely are. I mean, if you look at them, you knew that before, but you can watch this and you know that they are Pelosi Republicans, the only two Republicans who would participate in this sham. Ironically, you have MSN.com. Here's the headline. Democrats look to move past partisan rancor and set a serious tone for the January 6th investigation. This is the kind of Soviet-level propaganda that we're seeing about everything, whether it's about the election or whether it's about January the 6th, whether it's about the pandemic or the vaccines. These people have absolutely no credibility. I don't know why they think people are going to believe them. Nobody believed Izvestia or Pravda either. You got Adam Schiff, they quote, because, you know, nobody would think that Adam Schiff was involved in partisan rancor, right? Not any reporter at MSN. No, they're shoveling this. They quote him, he says, I think it's going to be quite informative and emotionally powerful. They had already rigged up all of this tearful crying back and forth where the police officers are crying and Adam Kinziger is crying. And they did everything but cry on each other's shoulder because, you know, they would get sick if they did that. They can't do that. Yeah, the most serious attack on the Capitol since the War of 1812, they said. Oh, really? Yeah. That's seriously what they're pushing out. They seriously said that. That's mainstream media's approach on this. And then you find out that the black officer there is a BLM activist. He had retweeted last year when Tucker Carlson said, Kenosha, Wisconsin, devolved into anarchy because the authorities abandoned the people. Those in charge, from the governor on down, refused to enforce the law. They stood back. They watched Kenosha burn. Are we really surprised that looting and arson accelerated to murder, said Tucker Carlson. And so that was a tweet. And so this guy, Harry Dunn, retweets that with this comment. He said, why is murder an appropriate response to property damage, but property damage isn't an appropriate response to murder? There you go. That makes sense. So if the police murder somebody, according to his equation, then that means that the mob ought to be able to destroy the local businesses in their community. That makes perfectly good sense. I think that's equal and fair, don't you? It's appropriate. Well, that's what this Capitol police officer, who was whining and crying in Capitol Hill testimony, said. He thinks those things are equivalent. They're perfectly fine. You know, go in the black community and destroy the livelihood and the lives of black businessmen who have worked all their life to build something. You just destroy it. That'll teach the police, won't it? His testimony, the Trump supporters have been on the scene before, but never before was there, quote, the attempt to overthrow democracy. He actually said that that was an attempt to overthrow democracy. Ron Paul is talking about the out-of-control January the 6th hearings. He said, these show trials are a threat to all of us. And he talks about the recent 8-month sentence of Paul Hodgkins, a guy who was never accused of violent crime. He's one of these people who just walked in when it was open. But the prosecutor, Special Assistant U.S. Attorney Mona Sedke, declared that he was, quote, a terrorist. She called him a terrorist. He was not accused of any violent crime. She called him a terrorist. She said in her sentencing memo, quote, the government recognizes that Hodgkins did not personally engage in or espouse violence or property destruction. So how is he a terrorist? She added, we concede that Mr. Hodgkins is not, under the legal definition, a domestic terrorist. Nevertheless, he is, because I say so. Because, you know, science and law that we're being governed by. No, we're being dictated to by these bureaucratic tyrants when it comes to law in the same way they're dictating to us when it comes to science. Yet Hodgkins should be considered a terrorist because of the actions that he took, entering the Senate to take a photo of himself, writes Ron Paul. She said that is framing in the context of terrorism. What does that mean, in the context of terrorism? Because somehow the context of his actions were, in her words, imperiling democracy. It's almost like these people have got somebody writing a script for them, don't you think? It's almost like maybe this prosecutor came in and coached these police officers to talk about how this is imperiling democracy, this is the worst attack since we've had since 1812, so on. When the Capitol, by the way, was burned down. You know, we had some radical lefties who actually exploded a bomb, but, you know, we don't want to count that either. That doesn't count. The judge in this particular case, Randolph Moss, admitted as much. He said, in carrying a Trump flag into the Senate, he said Hodgkins was declaring his loyalty to a single individual over the nation. Let me tell you what's happening. This judge and this prosecutor are declaring their loyalty to a political party and to a political agenda over the good of the country because they are shutting down the rule of law to punish their political enemies, to identify their political enemies as domestic terrorists, to expand domestic surveillance and the police state surveillance that they've been building for the last 20-some-odd years. As Michael Tracy pointed out, while 8 months in prison is a ridiculously long sentence for standing on the floor of the so-called People's House and taking a photograph, it would also be a ridiculously short sentence for somebody for terrorism, wouldn't it? So you're a terrorist, you only get 8 months? No, that doesn't make any sense. It doesn't make any sense to give somebody 8 months for taking a picture standing on the floor. I mean, he took a picture. It's like, hey, look, I'm in the... they let me in. So, Ron Paul points out, the purpose of the Soviet show trials was to create an enemy that the public could collectively join in hating and blaming for all of the failures of the system. And that's what's going on right now. Libertarian author Jem Bovard quoted from Solzhenitsyn's Gulag Archipelago about how average people turned out to demand justice for the people that had been designated by the state as political enemies, as enemies of the state. There were universal meetings and demonstrations, including even school children. This is quoting from Solzhenitsyn. It was the newspaper march of millions, and the roar rose outside the windows of the courtroom. Death, death, death. Well, we're not quite there yet, says Ron Paul, but we're moving in that direction. Americans are being sent to prison not for what they did, but for what they believe. Which brings us back to the crimes of hate. The crimes of being politically incorrect. As I said at the beginning of the program, political correctness, that is a term from the Soviet Union. What we're seeing in these show trials is a tactic from the Soviet Union. To declare your political enemies as enemies of the state, as domestic terrorists, that is a Soviet tactic. You know, we have Trump warning, hey, we're at the beginning of a communist system. No, it began last year. You know, when you locked down and told people that they were not essential, put them on a universal basic income, a welfare handout. And when you let these people run roughshod over us, saying what we could and could not say, when you allowed that to be done to you as a weak and feckless president. Capitol riot arrest of restaurant owners rattles a hometown. And this is an example of a woman in upstate New York, Jamestown, New York. And I said a crank caller ordered an insurrection pizza from Pauline Bauer's restaurant. A profane piece of hate mail addressed her as a domestic terrorist, and she even became a punchline on Stephen Colbert's late-night talk show on CBS. Because, you see, that's the way they do it. That's what these talk shows have become. They become shows that aren't funny, that are just political propaganda. We're going to take a quick break, and we're going to be right back and talk about the masks and some hopeful news, because we're starting to see a rebellion against these masks. Stay with us.
The Common Man. They created Common Core to dumb down our children. They created Common Pass to track and control us. Their Commons Project to make sure the commoners own nothing. And the communist future. They see the common man as simple, unsophisticated, ordinary. But each of us has worth and dignity created in the image of God. That is what we have in common. That is what they want to take away. Their most powerful weapons are isolation, deception, intimidation. They desire to know everything about us while they hide everything from us. It's time to turn that around and expose what they want to hide. Please share the information and links you'll find at thedavidknightshow.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing.
If you can't support us financially, please keep us in your prayers. TheDavidKnightShow.com. All right, let's talk a little bit about what's happening with the mask. It's created a lot of pushback, even with some liberal commentators. They're saying, I don't get what's going on. You got people who have been identified with conservatives, identified with the Republican Party, people like Nolte at Breitbart saying, I feel like I've been deceived. Well, yeah, you have. I have said many times, I've read some of the stuff that they've written as they cheer the vaccine. And these people who now admit that they're really angry, now admit that they've been deceived, they still can't fully embrace what is happening here. That's the sad thing. We'll see this in a second. But as MSN's headline says, new CDC mask guidance confuses and frustrates Americans as the Delta variant is surging. Well, it doesn't have anything to do with the Delta variant. That is confusing as well. That is what they're using to muddy the water about how A, the vaccines don't work, and B, the vaccinated people are getting sick with whatever this is. Let me tell you, the jab, the Trump shot jab, is producing a coronavirus variant. That's what the spike is. They've told us that. They said, we're going to have your body manufacture this protein spike. We now know how dangerous that is, the thing that's causing all of these adverse effects and deaths. But we're going to manufacture that. But don't worry, it's not exactly the same as a coronavirus protein spike. Oh, you mean it's a variant? Oh, yeah, it's a variant. So don't worry about that. Oh, wait, we got this Delta variant that's making people very sick as we're having your body manufacture a variant of the coronavirus. They thought the worst of the coronavirus pandemic was behind them. Vaccines were here. The masks could come off. A summer slowly returning to normal seemed within reach. And then came the hyper-transmissible Delta variant. This is supposedly objective mainstream media talking about a hyper-transmissible Delta variant. And with it, a call from health officials for everyone to start masking up indoors again. One person that they quote in Texas said, I feel like the government keeps changing what they want to do. I'm not sure they know what the answer is to COVID. Which brings us to this Mexican guy and his comments on the vaccine. I'll have to translate it, but I think you'll get the gist of it here. So the CDC strongly urges everyone to get their two shots. Double jabbed, as they call it. I'm getting nonstop messages from friends and family bragging about their vaccination. Congratulations, you believe the TV, I don't. They rejoice because the CDC tells them they can go outside again. They can take off their masks, visit friends. No more restrictions. Early 2 months and a new variant suddenly discovered. You dummies, he says. And now they have to put their masks back on. Did you really believe life would go back to normal? And now they blame us, the unvaccinated. I love that clip. I could listen to that over and over again. I love that guy's laugh. And of course, that's a meme, like the Hitler memes that you've seen before, right? But perfectly appropriate. We should laugh at these people. You know, there's some people that believe this, and they and their family have had severe injury and death. And we should not laugh about that. We should get really, really angry about that. But, you know, when I look at these people that they've collected their comments there on MSN, this article from MSN.com, I mean, that's what basically he's talking about these people. Listen to this. I'm vaccinated, and I'm supposed to put a mask on to be in a bookstore or wherever? What is the CDC telling us now? The vaccines don't work? She says, okay, I'll wear a mask, but it's absurd. See, they still can't get themselves out of that bubble. And that's why we need to laugh at them. You know, we just need to play that clip over and over again. Because they realize this is totally absurd. They realize they've been had. And they're going to still go along with it. They're still going to wear the mask. So, you know, this is the kind of logical thinking that you saw in Monty Python's Holy Grail, where, you know, if she weighs the same as a duck, therefore, she's made of wood, and if she's made of wood, it follows that she's a witch. There you go. That's the kind of line of thinking that we're getting from the CDC and the Biden administration and Anthony Fauci and the rest of these people. We need to wear masks indoors to control the spread of the variant, said a public health expert in New York. You know, but the vaccine was supposed to stop the spread. It was supposed to stop the virus. They told us we could have our life back if we did it. No, you've just been injected with something that you don't have any idea what it is and hasn't been tested, and you haven't seen the full effects of it yet either, unfortunately. And neither have we, because you're spreading that, you people who have been vaccinated. The Nevada Gaming Control Board has reinforced a new mandate, telling casinos and businesses that it issues licenses to. They said, you got to put up a notice. You're going to have to continue to ensure that the best practices are used. You will have to put up signs that say that masks need to be worn. They're going to require all guests and visitors to start wearing masks indoor in public areas starting Friday. See, it's such a horrendous pandemic from this hyper-transmissible Delta variant that we're going to wait another couple of days before we tell people to put on masks, you know? What's the point of the vaccine if we still have to wear the mask? Said another person who was almost about to catch on. But then the CDC said that Walensky was not made of wood. She's actually not a witch, right? I don't want to wear a mask the whole time I'm there, said another one in a text message. I don't want to spend all the money for a trip to Vegas and then have to suffer through a mask. Well, she must be a domestic terrorist because, you know, we've been told by Kathleen Sebelius and by Geraldo Rivera and all these other people in the Mockingbird press and the corporate government that you're going to kill their grandkids now, even though there's no risk from the virus to the grandkids. No, you're going to kill the grandkids. So you must be a domestic terrorist. In Miami-Dade County, where the mayor on Wednesday revived indoor mask requirements. Now, just think about this. I was talking about how the satire article from Revolver saying that in order to get the attention of some of these Republicans who don't care at all about due process, even for the people that are on the same political side as them, and I'll give her credit. I've never seen anything that I thought I would ever compliment Pocahontas on anything. But she had more to say about the conditions that these people are being kept under in January 6th than anybody else, including Republicans, who are afraid to be associated with that. But anyway, this Cuban mayor who has been saying, we need to invade Cuba, we need to invade Cuba. And now this little snowflake is invading your private space and putting mask mandates on. Yeah. Because why? We got to invade Cuba because of tyranny. And yet, what is he doing to the people in Miami, telling them to put a mask on their face, right? So, in Miami, the mayor put on indoor mask requirements. And Natalia Gonzalez, 28, she doesn't think the mandate should extend to restaurants, bars, and stores. She says, it's unnecessary. I think it should be a personal choice. I mean, what do you think this is, America? No, you're living under a Cuban mayor who wants to go to war with Cuba over, you know, tyranny, so he puts a mask on your face. She says it's unnecessary. It should be a personal choice. Another person who works at a Miami pop art store said he recently stopped wearing his mask at work. Now he's waiting to see whether his bosses will require them again. But he said, even in light of the Delta variant, I'm getting sick of this. We're getting mixed contradictory signals from officials, he said. When I heard about the Delta strain, it didn't shake me up any more than the other news about COVID. See, you're going to have to invent something even scarier. Yeah, go full on with Lambda, you know. Maybe you can find Typhoid Mary and you can tell everybody Mary had a little Lambda. And so now you've got to put on the fleeces on your face again. He says, I feel they're fear-mongering us all the time. You think? After 502 days, it took Biden to wake people up. That's what I said. Trump was putting everybody to sleep. Biden and these other people, because it's in their nature. See, if they were to play this smart, they could keep going with this thing, but they can't hold themselves back. They've got to double down, and they've got to kill the animal that's taking them across, the scorpion or whatever that's going across on the back of the turtle. They just got to sting him right there. They can't help it. It's just in their nature. Let's hope that it sinks their agenda. I fear they're fear-mongering us all the time. It's like they want to push an agenda. You think? If I could just get him to watch the show, he wouldn't have any questions about that. The protein spike is a variant, they said. We're seeing a lot of adverse reactions from this. But of course, you know, it's not the Trump shot that's making everybody sick. It's not the Trump shot that is the Delta variant. A 34-year-old mother of three said, I don't want to wear it, especially when it's too hot. But it's okay, I'll do it. Because, you know, her brain doesn't hurt anymore. Her brain hurt a lot at the beginning of this. But after a while, you just get accustomed to it. And then it starts to get hard to think because of the oxygen deprivation and the CO2 buildup. Marcus Chavez, 24, of L.A., said he's going to follow the rules. He's fully vaccinated, he said, but he understands the rules in crowded places. I'm not one to tell people what to do, but I strongly suggest that they do this just from a scientific point of view. Oh, so now this 24-year-old Marcus Chavez out of L.A., so he is now a scientist, is that right? No, he's just passing along the scientific edicts from the experts who've been on every side of this issue. Fauci, when asked on PBS, he goes on PBS and he's being interviewed by Judy Woodruff. Oh, there you go, she's made of wood, right? She is a witch, therefore. So Judy Witch says to Fauci, she said, they're saying that this new mandate is going to undermine confidence on the part of the people who haven't been vaccinated yet. You think? It's going to take away their incentive to get vaccinated. Yeah, but this is what Fauci says. Well, I would think, Judy, just the opposite. He thinks that by putting masks on people after you've lied to people, that it's going to drive people into getting vaccinated. I mean, this is why I said it's in their nature, right? The new mask mandates will incentivize people to get vaccinated, says Fauci. Because, you know, they're going to use a stick. They're going to stick you with a needle. They're going to beat you with a stick because, you know, they're made of wood. anyway, he said, we would not be in this situation if we already had now the overwhelming proportion of the population vaccinated. Yeah, we'd not be having this viral dynamic that gives you red and orange zones. You gave us the red and orange zones. You colored in the map. You don't have any data. You're not telling anybody anything other than, I'm a scientist. Do what I say. Meanwhile, St. Louis County Council is in rebellion. They voted 5-2 to rescind a mask mandate that was imposed on them by a little bureaucrat. This person who was the town manager, county executive, Sam Page, imposed a mask mandate. They had dozens of people show up to a meeting, and then the city council voted 5-2 to end the order. They said, you failed to consult with us before issuing it, and that's now required under a new state law. See, people are starting to catch on. We put on some other things saying, hey, we're not going to be ruled by a bunch of petty bureaucrats, not by public health officials, not by a city manager. You're going to have to go back to representation, right? Under our republic system, if we're going to have rules and we're going to have laws, those are enacted by people that we elect periodically, in theory at least, that we elect them. One person stood up and said, what good does this do? She tore up her vaccination card. I got vaccinated. You told me to do all this stuff. I did it. I got sick and, you know, now it's useless. Amanda Garavaglia comforted her daughter, Sophia 9, after reading Sophia's letter that she wrote sharing that she cannot breathe through her mask during school. And the mother is very angry about that. So the people erupted into applause, holding signs, "My body, my choice, stop the tyranny." One person got up and said, actually, as a councilman who was there, he said, "Too many American men and women have given the last full measure of devotion for us to be cavalier with the very liberty that they fought and died to provide. I will not abide any measures that seek to compromise or erode our liberty and freedom." So that's one of the councilmen who was one of the five against two who moved to shut down these edicts by the town manager. And then this also brings joy to my heart to see that only two people have agreed to pay mask fines to the FAA. A story from Breitbart. I mean, think about that. I've talked about that many times, how outrageous that is and how expensive these fines have become. They vary and range from $250, which I think is way too expensive for not wearing a mask. They go all the way up to over $50,000, $52,500. So they have been busy. They said, The Hill reported, there have been 2,413 incidents of non-compliance since they put the mask mandates on planes, which took effect under Trump last year. Now, the TSA and the FAA have been pushing this out. The TSA has only been able to complete investigations on 1,793 of them, among which only two people actually agreed to pay the fine. So we got people who are not paying their fine, which is good. We need to have as one person is looking at it, they said, well, that's maybe not too surprising. Our explanation said, this guy is an expert, by the way, because he's a professor at the MIT Sloan School of Management, looking at risk management and analytics. So they go to an expert to tell them what to think of this. What's going on? I mean, we got people who are given excessive fines, you know, from excessive to ludicrous, you know, it goes from that scale. And so even the people on the excessive side of the scale, $250 fine, they're not paying it. And definitely the ludicrous people aren't paying it. So they asked this professor, and he says, well, he puts on his thinking cap, dusts off his medal as a doctor of thankology, and he says, one explanation could be that the people who already violated it to start with are people who feel strongly to begin with and who don't think the federal government could even mandate something like that. So it works. They do it partially as a protest, so it's not surprising that they haven't paid the fine. Not to mention they probably don't have a spare $52,500 sitting around the house. Developing a case that we believe will hold up in court takes a considerable amount of work from our safety inspectors and our attorneys, and they're currently working on a record number of cases, said a spokesperson for the FAA. So this is key. You know, just as we try to organize opt-out to shut down the TSA when they started with the body scan stuff. Remember that? I was proud of the fact that InfoWars did that back in 2013, right after I got there. There was a different organization then. And when they ran out, remember you had the underwear bomber, and you had the false flag, you had Kurt Haskell, I think was the name of the lawyer, who witnessed this. He said, yeah, they put this guy who was like he didn't seem to know what he was doing. And he shows up escorted by a guy in a suit who speaks perfect English, gets him past the gate, and he said, I started watching this guy. Like, what is up with this? This is really strange. And he was the one who then tried, but it was incompetent, tried to light his shoe or something, which is supposed to be, or his underwear or whatever. It's like something out of Airplane. And on the basis of that, they put in the body scanners. And, you know, it wasn't interesting that Michael Chertoff, who had been head of Homeland Security under Bush. I think he was the first Homeland Security guy. But he had retired. He'd moved on. And he'd moved on to that big reward in corporate America, you know. He moved on to collect his reward. And he happened to be head of the company that was making the body scanners. And lo and behold, even though this happened around Christmas, these elves got busy, and they were able to make all of these machines in just a couple of weeks to roll them out during the holidays. I mean, you know, I guess they'd finished with all the toys they were going to produce for Santa. You know, they'd already had these things stockpiled, warehoused, ready to roll out, and they put out a false flag. And so the following Thanksgiving, because Thanksgiving is the busiest day of the busiest travel day of the year, we started organizing an opt-out of the scan thing. Said to everybody, don't go through the scanners. Make them pat you down. That will shut down the system. Do it. Not too many. Well, they did have a lot of people started to do enough, in fact, that on that busiest day of the year, when we were under such duress and threat from terrorism, the TSA just shut everything down and told everybody to go through because they didn't want to see what was going to happen. They believed that it was going to be big. We did too. Got a lot of traction. And so to avoid that on the busiest travel day of the year, when they're telling everybody, we've got to go through your underwear, we've got to go through your luggage, take off your shoes, do this, do that. Don't worry, just go through. It's nice. It's fine. That was the only Thanksgiving they did that. And so it's very heartening to see these people who have a couple of thousand people basically shutting down this airplane tyranny in the way that we hoped that they would have with the body scanners, but they're doing it with the maskers. And I said, oh, yeah? Well, I'm not going to wear a mask. All right, you're going to get a big fine, and we're going to throw you off the plane. And here's your $50,000 fine. Well, I'm not paying that either. And that's what we have to do. And then it creates a big backlog for them. And then when they start to put out excessive fines, because of what we're talking about here, I think, what is it, the Eighth Amendment that protects you against that? And then we have due process challenges. And so you start challenging these people every way that you can. And these are the people to do it. These are the people who were so adamantly against these ridiculous regulations that they wouldn't wear a mask in the first place. These are the very people who are going to resist this and shut this thing down. Challenge it. Challenge it. So the fines range from $250 to $52,500. And we've seen a lot of people getting $10,000 to $20,000, except for the Democrats, the Texas Democrats who chartered a private plane. It also, that rule also applies to the private planes. They were able to do that. Nobody has applied any fines to them. Oh, that's right. They're kind of like that congresswoman who set up the protest in the Senate. They can do whatever they wish. We don't have one standard of laws. The laws do not apply to politicians. They're not held to them. They're not restrained by what they can do to us. They can't be punished for breaking the law, and the laws cannot restrain them from coming after us. They do whatever they wish. What's the term for that? And then you have this on CNN. You even have a CNN anchor, Aaron Burnett, talking to Dr. Jonathan Reiner, who is a medical analyst for CNN. As she said in the interview, she said, quote, I understand what you're saying, but I also take a step back here and I say, okay, first they said, and of course I know science and information can change, right? But we remember at the very beginning here, mask up even if you're vaccinated because you could spread it. And then, yay, guess what? You cannot spread it. And now, oh my gosh, now you can maybe spread it. And now they're making the change to the masking guidance based on, wait for it, unpublished data, said Aaron Burnett. So they don't have to show you the data. They don't have to give you a reason because they're dictators. The laws, the rules come out of their mouth. You do whatever they say. They don't have to reason with you. They don't have to explain it. This is not science. This is not medicine. This is dictation that you're taking. The data, which the CDC did not present when making its announcement, quote, shows the vaccinated and the unvaccinated people infected by the Delta variant can have the same viral load, she said. So after changing it to maybe you can spread it, to you definitely can't, then to maybe you can, but it's really rare, now they're telling you it's really rare, but you have the same viral load. I don't understand. Please explain it to me. Well, you know, it's just experts. It's just experts. That's why you should not believe experts. That's what I'm telling you. You have then the Doctor of Congress. I have a doctorate of Congress. Dr. Brian Monahan, He is the House of Representatives attending physician. He's the one who writes all of those strange pills for Nancy Pelosi and other people that the House pharmacist was looking at and saying, "Oh, what? How do these people even make it to work, let alone decide how they're going to run our country?" And that's the problem, is that they're deciding how they want to run the country. But they're not even mentally competent to do this. If you look at what's been prescribed for them in the House pharmacy, remember that article? It was like a local paper there in Washington, and it was about 30 or 40 pages. This was back when Drudge was good. And he read this thing, and it's like buried on like page 30. There's a statement there where the person is talking about how all these congressional aides come in and fill the prescriptions for their masters. You know, the minions go to do it for them. And he says, "I look at some of these prescriptions like, how do these people even find their way to the Capitol Hill?" But this attending physician of the House of Representatives, Dr. Brian Monahan, who, by the way, Monahan is a rear admiral. I wonder if he gets his butt wiped, too, just like Joe Biden. You can tell I didn't get much sleep last night. Monahan announced Tuesday night that representatives would be required to wear masks regardless of vaccination status. The Senate has not reinstituted a mask mandate, however. But he's up there telling everybody, "You're going to have to wear a mask mandate because I say so." And he's not wearing a mask as he's doing it. Because, you know, the Delta variant doesn't start until 12:01 p.m. on Friday, right? He had lifted this back in June, and now he's reinstating it because he can. Because he can. You have Dr. Scott Gottlieb. Says, "I think in another 3 weeks we'll be through this." Now, understand where we are with this. You have the Democrats who, they just want to kill people because it's their nature. They just want to kill liberty and freedom and the Constitution. That's just their nature. And then you have the people like Scott Gottlieb, who, even though he was part of the FDA, he is now on the board of Pfizer. And I suggest that because of this revolving door, we should start spelling FDA PFDA. as in Pfizer. We just call it the PFDA. The P is silent because it's for profits, and we don't want to talk about that. A silent P, FDA. So he was part of the PFDA, and then he went to Pfizer as the on the board of directors. And people like him and people like Dr. Mark Siegel, who's constantly pushing vaccines on Fox. The two of them have always been angry that Biden doesn't want to give people freedom. You know, so you've got Biden, and you got especially, I guess, the best example of this is Dr. Leanna Wen of Planned Parenthood. Dr. Leanna Wen is, she cannot constrain her nature just to kill everybody. You know, she went on The View, and she said, "When I was president of CEO, and I she told this to the empty heads on The View, Joy Behar, and all the rest of these. She said, "When I would go on media, I'd get texts and I'd get calls from all these board members from Planned Parenthood, and they say, 'You didn't say the word abortion. You're supposed to say the word abortion. We're not ashamed of abortion. We're proud of abortion. That's what we are. We're abortion. Abortion, abortion, abortion.'" She said, "Well, they wanted me to constantly push that, and I got in trouble for not saying it enough." Now, when she goes on media, what is she doing? Well, she's, you know, pushing the stick. Hit him with a stick. Get him with a vaccine. I don't care what you want. Yeah. This is a woman who has always pushed mass murder. And that's exactly what she's doing now. You know, she was doing murder for hire at Planned Parenthood. You know, they were getting orders from Fauci at the NIH and from the PFDA saying, "We need to have some body parts. You know, we want kids of a certain age. We want the parts fresh, not frozen. And we'll pay you $10,000, $15,000, $18,000 for it." We've got the documents now, thanks to Kamala Harris and Javier Becerra, who sued them. And so she was a hired killer. And the people who are hiring her to kill was the NIH and the FDA. Things really haven't changed. She's still a hired killer. just not for Planned Parenthood, for now for the big pharmaceutical companies, but she's still being hired and incentivized and probably getting the little text messages from the people at the CDC and the FDA saying, you need to push this vaccine, you need to push the sticks. Keep sticking people. So Scott Gottlieb says, I think in another 3 weeks we'll be through this. Because, see, he and Mark Siegel, they want their vaccine product to be seen as something that's going to make a difference in your life. They don't like what the Biden administration and what Leanna Wynne are doing. It's like, don't tell them that you know, make this a good thing, right? If you're smart about this, you're going to use positive operant conditioning. Yeah, that's what B.F. Skinner figured. You know, you don't want to just keep hitting them or sticking them with sticks. You want to give them rewards for doing what you want to do. But they can't do it because it's in their nature. And so they keep punishing people while Scott Gottlieb, who wants you to buy the pharmaceutical product, and Mark Siegel, who wants you to buy the pharmaceutical product that he's selling that funds his $1 million salary, and I'm sure he's making over $1 million. Catherine Herridge, who's a reporter for National Security, left Fox News because she couldn't get more than a $900,000 salary. Like, what's going on with this? Like, Megyn Kelly's making $25 million. Look at what Sean Hannity's making. You got a lot of pharmaceutical bucks there sitting on the table. You either choke it up or I'm going to go to another network. So she went to another network. What do you think they're paying Siegel to push these death jabs? And they want people to see that there's a perceived benefit from them. But the Democrats just want to hit people with sticks. So you've got Gottlieb saying, I think in another 3 weeks you're going to be through this. And he says, there are people who are developing mild asymptomatic infections even after the vaccination, you know, but we'll be okay with this. It really does help you a lot. Believe me, you should get the jab. As a matter of fact, you should get three of them now. You have a lot of Republican governors saying, we're not going to do it. Listen to the list. We've got Nebraska's Governor Pete Ricketts, quote, the CDC's new guidance suggesting that vaccinated people wear masks indoors flies in the face, no pun intended, of the public health goals that should guide the agency's decision-making. Yeah, it does fly in my face, too, to tell me I've got to put a mask on my face. The state of Nebraska will not be adopting their mask guidance. Arizona Governor Doug Ducey, quote, public health officials in Arizona have made it clear that the best protection against COVID-19 is the vaccine. And, of course, probably Scott Gottlieb's cut him a check to push that vaccine, too. Today's announcement by the CDC will unfortunately only diminish confidence in the vaccine. Ron DeSantis says he trusts parents to make the best choices for their kids. Even Governor Abbott is now pretending that he doesn't like masks. This little petty, backstabbing, lying sneak who put mask mandates on us 4 to 6 months after all this baloney started and put mask mandates on people here in Texas for over 9 months. And he's so gaslighted and scared these people that they don't want to take them off around here anymore. But now Abbott, because why, we're getting closer to a re-election time, he wants to distance himself from this so people don't remember what he did to us last year. Well, I remember. I'll never forget. I'll never forgive Greg Abbott for participating in this. Abbott said, now is the time for personal responsibility. 2020 wasn't the time for personal responsibility, but this year is. Every Texan has the right to choose whether they will wear a mask or whether their children will wear a mask. Now he sounds like me because he's getting close to election time. Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds said, this is not grounded in reality or common sense. That's right. You have South Dakota Governor Kristi Noem said on Twitter, the CDC shifts their position again, all uppercase. South Dakota's cases remain low. If you're worried about the virus, you're free to get vaccinated. You can wear a mask or you can stay home, but we will not be mandating anything. And the CDC's inconsistency doesn't help the American people. Even Governor Kay Ivey, you know, stick the IV in your arm. Remember her over the weekend? Well, I don't know. You tell me what to do. It's those unvaccinated people. What are we going to do about them? Right? Remember that? She said, now, there are those who believe the government should mandate the vaccine or that we should bribe people to take it. That's not going to happen in my state. No matter how many times the media asks me. So now she's singing a different tune. Yeah, that's right. Give Granny a free ride on the back of the truck, Jeb. Unlike 2020, we both have the scientific knowledge and the tools to prevent the spread of this disease, and we're not going to go back to that, said Biden. Oh, wait a minute. But that's what he's doing now. See how these politicians flip-flop, flip-flop, just like the CDC. Why is it that the CDC is flip-flopping around, and the FDA, and Fauci? Could it be because they're politicians and not scientists, that they can say one thing one day and do exactly the opposite the other day? It doesn't matter which political party you're associated with. You can be Abbott, you can be Trump, you can be Kay Ivey, or you can be a bureaucrat working for a federal bureaucracy, and you're a politician too. And so politicians have the right to change their mind a lot more frequently than the weather, actually. Only two people, again, have agreed to pay those fines, and that is a very, very encouraging thing. That is, I think, one of the best aspects of resistance that I have seen. We're going to be right back. Stay with us.
The Common Man. They created Common Core to dumb down our children. They created Common Pass to track and control us. Their Commons Project to make sure the commoners own nothing. And the communist future. They see the common man as simple, unsophisticated, ordinary. But each of us has worth and dignity created in the image of God. That is what we have in common. That is what they want to take away. Their most powerful weapons are isolation, deception, intimidation. They desire to know everything about us while they hide everything from us. It's time to turn that around and expose what they want to hide. Please share the information and links you'll find at thedavidknightshow.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. If you can't support us financially, please keep us in your prayers. TheDavidKnightShow.com.
Elvis.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Beatles.
And the sweet sounds of Motown. Find them on the Oldies channel at APSradio.com.
For their support this month, we have reached our goal. I think we need to update the gas gauge, but I just want to let you know here we are at the end of the month, and we've met it. And we've had a lot of very generous supporters. And I want to thank Tony Arterburn. He has generously helped us, and I just want to say if you're looking to get something that is outside this fragile, unstable currency that is headed into inflation, if you want to get something that is of real value, that you physically hold, that you don't have to get at through the internet, take a look at Wise Wolf Gold. That's his website. And we'll be having Tony at some point, if we take a vacation at some point ever in the future, we'll be having Tony guest host for us here. He has done that in the past when I was when I had the show at InfoWars. And he has his own podcast as well. But wisewolf.gold. And if you want to do cryptocurrency, he also does that. And he has ways that you can hold the gold inside of an IRA. So take a look. Tony Arterburn, he is he's one of us. And I just want to say, as I got this from Harold in Canada. He said, by the way, he says, I don't know if you keep up with Dan Bongino's work or not, but if not, I'd like you to know that he's created an anti-cancel culture pay service, which he calls Align Pay. He says, I don't know whether it's up and running or not, but I suspect it's exactly the sort of thing you could use. I imagine it's going to take off, too. So I just thought you might be interested. We'll take a look at that. I appreciate that information. Anytime anybody has anything like that, I appreciate you passing that along. Because, you know, we never know what's going to happen. I mean, it was news this week, as I pointed out yesterday, the day before. PayPal is going to be banning people for political content, and Venmo that's owned by them and so forth. It's like, oh, really? Oh, tell me about it. That would be kind of nasty, wouldn't it? To start using the financial system to punish and to purge people. USA Today has now scrubbed a passage suggesting that vaccinated individuals may spread COVID with higher levels of the virus. NBC News, citing unnamed officials, said USA Today, aware of the decision, reported that it comes after new data suggests that vaccinated individuals could have higher levels of virus and infect others. Amid the surge of cases, we got cases here, the surging, right? Are you sick of this yet? I am so sick of Fauci. I'm so sick of hearing about the surge, and about cases. We got casedemics all over the place. And this phony use of the PCR test, called out for it years and years ago with AIDS and HIV. You know, they've run this scam now. I've been talking about what a scam it is over and over again and how they rig it. They've been running this for a year and a half. They're going to run it for another 5 months, but they know that they're not going to do it. So how do we know that there's a Delta virus? Well, of course, we don't. But data suggests that vaccinated individuals could have higher levels of virus and infect others amid the surge of cases driven by the Delta variant. USA Today reported that in a passage that was later scrubbed from the article. Because, you know, hey, if it's a study that goes up on the World Health Organization showing that Fauci's favorite company, Gilead, well, one of his favorite companies, he loves Moderna. He's got a great relationship with Operation Warp Speed czar Moncef Slaoui, has had for years. He has a good relationship with Gilead as well. He's tried to sell remdesivir for a long time. He tried to sell it for AIDS. He tried to sell it for Ebola. And then he tried to sell it for COVID. And when he did, there was a study that went up on the World Health Organization site that said, this stuff doesn't work. It's got some severe side effects, and it doesn't make anybody better. That report came down within a couple of hours, just like this thing came down off of USA Today. And then within a week, Fauci put up his own study that he had done internally that was not peer-reviewed. It was revered, all right, by his peers, by his subordinates. It was revered as well. It was not peer-reviewed. And he put that up, and he changed the evaluation method, right? The evaluation for a therapeutic is, does it cure you, right? Does it cure you? Does it make you better? Can you say, you know, here's our control group that didn't get it, and they had the disease, and they did not get the treatment. And here's the people who had the disease or the condition, and they got the treatment. So did they get better? Did they get cured? And it didn't make any difference. But what he did was he changed the standard, and he said, yeah, but the guys that had it, they got, if they did survive, and there's no difference in the people that got it and didn't get it surviving. But if they did survive, I think they got better 30% faster. So that's the new standard of care. They made billions of dollars on it. They've done this type of thing. They censor information that they don't like, and they put out lies and propaganda. That's the way the Soviet system is now working. And then there's this that I referred to earlier in the program from Nolte, one of the editors at Breitbart. Just listen to this. I'm beginning to regret my decision to get vaccinated. He says, I'm beginning to feel like a sucker for getting vaccinated. It's like, I don't want to. And I'll laugh at him because neither he nor anybody else in the family got seriously injured with this. And he deserves to be laughed at, like the Mexican vaccine guy. He said, I didn't get vaccinated because I love needles. I hate needles. I didn't get vaccinated for the love of going to two separate appointments to get a vaccine. I hate leaving the house. Well, I didn't get vaccinated for the love of standing in line. I hate lines. And I sure didn't get vaccinated for the love of losing an entire weekend lying in bed sick as a dog, which was the immediate side effect of my second Moderna shot. He was lucky. He just got sick as a dog for a week. We've had a lot of people who have had their entire life destroyed. A couple of days later, my legs just give out. I can't feel them anymore. Remember the lady who was in the wheelchair with the football player whose wife was also now permanently damaged? She has like MS symptoms, and they're getting worse. And so they put together a database, and they put together a presentation with Ron Johnson. Just heartbreaking to see that lady who's maybe in her mid-30s breaking down in tears when she said, "The doctor told me I'll never walk again, just get used to it." It almost makes me sick to see somebody like Nolte at Breitbart just saying, "Well, I kind of think I've been had here." Boy, you are lucky. You idiot. You idiot. And you're going to spread it around to people as well. That's exactly what you're going to do. He goes on to say, "Well, I got vaccinated for two reasons. The first was to protect my wife, who was in an at-risk group. The second was to get out of that filthy, stinking mask. And then the CDC told me my wife would no longer be at risk, and I could get my life back to normal. I wouldn't have to wear the mask. But now, according to the CDC, I'm the a-hole for believing the CDC. Not only are mask mandates back for the vaccinated, I'm being told that we're not bulletproof, and we can spread it." He said, "The idea of injecting myself with a vaccine that has still not received full and official FDA approval made me uncomfortable." It made you uncomfortable? I mean, you spend your time at Breitbart talking about grifters, thieves, liars, and manipulators because you're covering politics, right? That's what it's all about. And you credulously followed these people? I mean, didn't you think that Breitbart was somehow skeptical of government, having observed them at close quarters for a long time? Well, you would be wrong, because they can be big government cheerleaders if the people with the right letter behind their name shows up. He said, "I went ahead anyway because the CDC told me." The idea of injecting myself with a vaccine that's still not received, but I did it because the CDC said that. And what infuriates me the most is how this put my loved ones at risk. Imagine if his wife had been paralyzed for life. Or imagine if it had cost his wife her life. No, trust the government. Trust the CDC. Breitbart says, Nolte says, let that sink in. Let that sink in where these guys are coming from. I mean, how can you be that clueless to cover this all these years? He says, "I'm currently, at this very moment, visiting with my parents, who are definitely in the at-risk group. These visits are based solely on the CDC's promise that the vaccines were bulletproof. Never in a million years would I put my parents at risk." Will he ever stop trusting the CDC? Will Nolte ever stop trusting Fauci? He says, "If we catch the coronavirus, sure, the vaccine decreases the risk of serious illness or death. I still believe that, at least for now," he said. Why would you believe that? How many times? What was that? Go back and listen to George W. "Fool me, fool me, fool me twice. Don't get fooled again," right? How many times do they have to fool you before you keep falling for this? Maybe that's why they're still tugging on the pant leg of Donald Trump, because these people at Breitbart are clueless hacks. Clueless hacks at the best. He said, "All the BS about how masks are useless, then masks are necessary, how Black Lives Matter riots don't spread the virus, but MAGA gatherings are super spread events, how mandatory lockdowns and social distancing and masking are necessary. Let's not talk about how they're not in Texas, Florida, and South Dakota. After all this, do I believe the CDC lied to me and suckered me into getting vaccinated? You're damn right I do," he said. But he still believes. Why? Why does he still believe that somehow that's going to protect his parents? Because he wants to believe. He doesn't have any reason to believe. There's not a shred of evidence. If he was an objective observer, analyst, reporter, if he was truthful with himself, if he was truthful with his audience, he would not believe for a second that any of the stuff that these people say. How many times do they have to deceive you and lie to you before you realize that they are liars? He said, "The sales pitch to sucker us into getting vaccinated went like this. Hey, if you get vaccinated, all your worries are over and life can return to normal. But now, to bully the unvaccinated into getting vaccinated, we're being told, hey, if you're vaccinated, you get to go back into the mask because you could die otherwise." Liars, he said. And he says, "But let me close with a note of caution. The coronavirus is not nothing. It's not a hoax. So if you're anyone who's in contact with an at-risk group, you have to take this seriously." He said, the coronavirus I take seriously. The CDC is a joke. Well, I would ask Nolte, why is it that HCQ and ivermectin are not allowed, right? Why are they forbidden? Verboten, you shall not speak. Halten Sie. No talking about HCQ, ivermectin. You'll get pulled off. Ah, now we're starting to get the idea of how they can control people like Breitbart and Nolte to keep pushing this ridiculous stuff even when they know that they're being lied to, right? Yeah, so maybe you'll start to wake up and realize what this is all about. And maybe you'll do this.
Show me the money! Jerry, you better yell! Show me the money! Show me the money!
That's right, you better ask somebody to show you the money. Show me the money at Breitbart. Who's paying us off to do this kind of stuff? Show me the money at the CDC and the FDA. Matter of fact, Matt Taibbi, who's now gone independent because he didn't like the controls that are being put on his speech at Rolling Stones, says the vaccine aristocrats is what he calls them. Well, they're not aristocrats. They're just billionaires. They're just friends of Trump and Biden and other corrupt politicians. He says, on this week with George Stephanopoulos this past Sunday, you had a group of Washington poobahs, including Chris Christie, Rahm Emanuel, Margaret Hoover, and Donna Brazile. Now, just so you know who these people are, you know Chris Christie, the Republican governor, Rahm Emanuel, the former mayor of Chicago, kind of a thug hitman for Obama, Donna Brazile, shoveling questions over to Hillary Clinton about the upcoming CNN debate, that type of stuff. And then Margaret Hoover. Margaret Hoover was an aide to George W. Bush and to Rudy Giuliani, the 9/11 twins. And so she is part of that. And listen to what she had to say. She said, if you're going to get government-provided health care, this is a Republican aide, again, to George W. Bush and to Giuliani. And we got the New York Times saying, we need to have George W. Bush be the global vaccine ambassador, right? Because, you know, he's one of the guys that really helped to kick off this whole thing. Because 9/11 and Dark Winter, you know, the police state that was set in there with the Patriot Act, along with what we've just had with the Model State Health Emergency Powers Act, all of that was, they were, you know, one shoe and the other shoe's now dropped 20 years later after they've been practicing for it. But it was a single agenda, a single plan from the very beginning. And you had people like George W. Bush and Giuliani there at the very beginning. That's why I'm convinced that Trump isn't on this as well. So anyway, this aide to both George W. Bush and to Giuliani, Margaret Hoover, says if you're going to get government-provided health care, if you're going to get a VA treatment, Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, anything, your Social Security that you paid all of your life on your wages, that should be contingent upon vaccines, according to Margaret Hoover, this Republican. She said, you should be getting the vaccine. You should be getting the vaccine. If you're going to be on Social Security, even Medicare, Medicaid, VA, you know, you signing up for the military, dedicating years of your life to that, you don't deserve any health care in response to that unless you do the things that we're going to tell you to do. This is why you don't want government anywhere near health care. And this is why I oppose this from the very beginning. This is the kind of paternalism, kind of plantation paternalism. Hey, slaves, I got some food for you, but you do that first, right? Paternalistic plantation. That's what she is pushing out there, a slave plantation. Government health care always comes with lots of strings attached because now you're a ward of the state. And this is why we don't want to have universal basic income. This is why we don't want to be in a situation where we own nothing, but we're just little happy slaves on the plantation, right? No. That's what they want from you. They want to make you helpless, and they want to make you dependent slaves, and they're going to tell you what you have to do because you're like livestock to them. You know, I feed this cattle over here, and I want my cattle to have herd immunity, and I'm going to vaccinate them because I decided I'm going to vaccinate them. I'm going to do to them whatever I want because they're not human like me. They are not aristocrats. They're just elitists, criminals. She said, so you should be getting the vaccine, okay, because we're going to have to take care of you on the back end. So when we make public health, when the key consideration, public health becomes the issue, not individual health, when we have government health care, that means the government is going to care about everything that you do, and they're going to tell you what to do. They're going to dictate it to you because now, you know, you are somebody that, hey, you're going to be begging me for this stuff, so now I'm going to tell you what to do. He points out that the segment is called the Powerhouse Roundtable, the one that Stephanopoulos does with these four disgusting people. He said, sounds to me like a Denny's breakfast sampler. But he says, I guess he couldn't have named it the four hated windbags, so he calls it the Powerhouse Roundtable. And as Margaret Hoover is saying this disgusting thing, which I would have never heard except from a Democrat, this is why I've said many times, Republicans have become the Democrats of that I used to know in my 30s, and the Democrats have become full-on Stalinist, Leninist Marxists. And so when she says, when she goes into her 1990s, 1980s Democrat spiel, Donna Brazile nods sagely, and Rahm Emanuel all but gushed cartoon hearts. He said, you know, I'm having an out-of-body experience, he said, because I agree with you. And he refers to Rahm Emanuel as Obama's former hatchet man. Yeah, he was a pretty nasty guy, remember? So we've got our opponents. What are we going to do? And he stabs the table. Dead. This person, dead. He stabs the table. Like a mafia figure. I mean, just think Sonny out of The Godfather. Then you got Rahm Emanuel. and his older brother who wants to destroy the population. Openly admits it. Yeah, people over 70, they ought to be killed. Well, he got exactly what he wants now, right? Says, I think I ought to be killed myself when I get over that age. And then they put up a lower thirds, a chyron that said, frustration mounts with unvaccinated Americans. As he says, you know, I'm having an out-of-body experience because I agree with you, says Rahm Emanuel. Rahm Emanuel, Obama, Donna Brazile, Clinton, Margaret Hoover, Rudy, and George W. They all agree with each other. See, it's a single party. There's not one or the other. I am so sick and tired of people who say, well, you don't like Trump, so I guess we should have had Hillary. It's like, well, if we'd had Hillary, you would have maybe said something about it. And I don't think anything would have been any different. The bipartisan love-in took place a few days after David Frum, famed Bush speechwriter and creator of the phrase Axis of Evil, wrote a column in The Atlantic entitled Vaccinated America Has Had Enough. And in it, Frum wondered, this guy who coined the Axis of Evil thing, and of course, you know what the real Axis of Evil is? It's Clinton, Obama, the Bushes, Trump. That's the Axis of Evil. It's got two sides to it. It's got two wings to it. The Axis of Evil is 9/11 and Dark Winter. And the Model State Health Emergency Powers Act that they rolled out, you know, they had their simulation, they had their false flag the week after 9/11, they put out their legislation, their model legislation for the states to enact because they didn't want to have a due process challenge on the 9th and 10th Amendment if it was done by the federal government. And then we had that shoe drop this year. So David Frum says, does Biden's America have a breaking point? Biden's America produces 70% of the country's wealth and then sees that wealth transferred to support Trump's America. Will blue America ever decide that it's had enough of being put medically at risk by people and places whose bills it pays? Check yourself, he says. Have you? Have you had enough? See what he's saying? Exactly the same stuff that we have being modeled for us and promoted by Disney via Joy Behar and those other know-nothing, never-been celebrity people that they have on there. You know, and when Rahm Emanuel was praising and gushing over Margaret Hoover, he said, I would close the space in. Yeah, he would close the space in. Meaning, if you want to participate, an X or Y activities, you've got to show that you're vaccinated. So there becomes a reward punishment type of system, and you make your own calculation. Let me tell you something. There's going to be more punishment than there is reward. Why? Because these people are sadistic monsters. And the people that are following their orders, even when they know that it's baloney, this is a massive sadomasochism, if you want to know. I mean, punish me, punish me, punish me. I'll do whatever you say. And then you have these sadistic people like Rahm Emanuel, like Margaret Hoover, like David Frum. And then you have the comment by Matt Taibbi. He says, I'm vaccinated. I think people should be vaccinated, but in this latest moral mania, and make no mistake about it, the quote-unquote pandemic of the unvaccinated PR campaign is the latest in a ceaseless series of such manias, dating back to late 2016. And it lays bare everything that is abhorrent and nonsensical in modern American politics, beginning with the no longer disguised aristocratic Washington consensus. If you want to convince people to get a vaccine, pretty much the worst way to go about it is with a massive blame campaign delivered by sneering blue noses who have richly deserved credibility problems with large chunks of the population and now insist that they're owed financially. Besides, oh, he nailed it. He nailed it. And he keeps calling them aristocratic. Why? Because if you use the term elitist or globalist, that has been used by the rest of us who have been covering this for a long time so much that immediately, oh, well, you know, that's a whistle, dog whistle term. Oh, yeah, he's like David Knight. Don't listen to anything that Matt Taibbi says. So fine, call it aristocratic. De Blasio is now getting on board with some bribes. He's offering $100 to everybody who gets vaccinated. You don't have to put your hat in the ring and hope that you're going to win $1 million or get nothing if you survive the shot. He's now going to give you, just flat out give you $100. And the responses on Twitter are great. First of all, Zero Hedge says, so hold out so we get $200 in a week? Another person says, how many double, triple, and quad vaxxers will come for money? That's right. Yeah, I remember when I was in high school, you would have the Skid Row bums that would sell their blood to the blood bank. Didn't make you feel too good about getting a blood transfusion. You want to set you, especially, seriously though, you especially should set aside your blood before you have an emergency or a family member does. You should set some of that stuff aside because there's something now, considering that 2/3 of the people have been shot up with these mRNA vaccines and they have massive effects on the blood, blood clots and other issues. You should seriously consider about setting aside some of your own clean blood in case you have an emergency or need surgery, you and your family members. You really should think about that. Just throw that out. But then another person says, well, I'm waiting for the $1,000 minimum. Might help to offset my living expense increase by the Federal Reserve for a couple of weeks. Fully vaccinated or spreading the Delta variant, so everybody needs to get vaccinated and to wear masks. That's exactly what the CDC is saying. All right? Never mind the fact that the rate of autism among our children has increased from 1 in 10,000 to 1 in 50 in the U.S., as the CDC has added scores and scores and scores and scores of vaccines. The U.S. also has the highest infant mortality rate in developed countries and the highest amount of vaccines injected. Pay no attention to that, right? Those things, I'm sure that's just a coincidence. I'm sure it's just a coincidence that we've had a 200-fold increase in autism as they changed the vaccination schedule. 200 times more people. I'd never heard of anybody until the early 2000s. I'd never heard of autism before. It was unknown when I was growing up. And so was this vaccine schedule when I was growing up. I mean, we didn't even get vaccinated for measles. God really blessed our generation. I grew up on well water, so I didn't get fluoride. I didn't get the vaccines. I didn't get any of that stuff. I didn't get shot up with vaccines until I traveled abroad, and I was an adult at that point in time, and I was naive about what was going on. I was ignorant about what was going on. But I know now. We conspiracy theorists were correct all along, writes Vaccine Impact, because the science is never settled, because scientific method inherently can never prove anything. It can only provide theories that are then subject to revision as more data becomes available. And the universe is far too large for anyone to ever claim that they have all the data unless your name is God Almighty, the Creator. Oh, and by the way, Fauci, we didn't just mention your name, so go back to your stupor. That's a great line. I love that. But I talked about this earlier. Former Planned Parenthood president was told to say abortion in every interview. She is still doing murder for hire. Now she's just employed by the pharmaceutical industry instead of by Planned Parenthood, because now in every interview she says vaccine stick force. Vaccine stick force. Force the vaccine. Hit them with a stick. Don't give them any carrots. They said, yeah, if you're not saying abortion, it sounds like you're ashamed of it. Own it. Own the child murder. Yeah, double down. Tell everybody they need to get their kids vaccinated with an experimental drug, even though they got zero risk. Here is a case, and this is something that Nolte needs to pay attention to. You know, he said, well, I'm really angry about this because my wife is an at-risk group. I have elderly parents that are at risk, and I've been told that, you know, I took this because I didn't want to wear the mask, but now they're making me wear the mask. They told me that it would help the people in my family that were at risk. I hope I'm not putting them in danger. Well, here's a person who did. Some fully vaccinated people who recently contracted the coronavirus, sharing their story. This is on Vaccine Impact. Meet Trevor Ramseer, a man from DePere. He said it was right after he got the vaccine that he first began having symptoms. He said, I had these body aches and pains that I'd never experienced before. My hands hurt down to the fingertips. They were sore and achy. I had teeth chattering chills and sweats and all of that. He said he left work early that day, and the next morning he received the news that he was dreading to hear. Sure enough, I woke up, slept miserably that night. I had teeth chattering. He said, phone rang at 11 o'clock. It was my doctor. He says, yeah, you're COVID positive. Though fully vaccinated, he had still contracted the virus, and he passed it on to his loved ones. His wife, who is also fully vaccinated, got it, along with his two small children who are not. His mom, who happened to be visiting for the first time since the pandemic, also contracted the virus. And she was fully vaccinated as well. And I've covered this in stories going back 7 or 8 years ago about measles when they were not mandated to go to school, as Trump made sure they were. And I said, you know, we've had these outbreaks. I remember one very clearly that was in New York. And you had four people that came down with measles. It's such a deadly disease, right? They all four died. No, they didn't have any problem, actually. Even though they were adults and it was a harder time for them, they didn't die. And it didn't spread to everybody either. Isn't that amazing? Patient zero was vaccinated two times and gave it to three other people who were also vaccinated two times. Two times. And so here you have a guy who comes down, has a, you know, case of sweats and body aches. And he got over it. It's kind of like the flu. Maybe it's worse than some of the flus that you've had. But, you know, there are some treatments that you're not being told about. There are some treatments that doctors will be punished for if they tell you about them, if they prescribe them. So we want to financially incentivize you to get the vaccine, which doesn't do any good, which makes you sick in and of itself. Might kill you, too. But you can't have the cheap, readily available drugs that have been used for other things for 60, 70 years. Ivermectin, HCQ. So he's fully vaccinated, two shots, passes it to his wife, two shots. Kids get it. Very rare for the kids to get it. His mom, fully vaccinated, gets it. I like this meme that was part of this article at Vaccine Impact. It says, vaccinated people can still get COVID, can still spread COVID, can still die from COVID, can potentially die from the vaccine. Then it says, unvaccinated people can still get COVID, can still spread COVID, can still die from COVID, but cannot die from the vaccine. Which group do you want to be in? That doesn't even include real treatments that we have a lot of doctors, America's frontline doctors, Dr. Zelenko. There you go. Good. Thank you, Travis. Have said I've cured thousands of people. Zinc, hydroxychloroquine, ivermectin, things like that. Health authorities, of course, are blaming the unvaccinated. But listen to this. Out of the UK, The Telegraph. Patients died after operations to remove objects left inside of them were canceled due to COVID. Now, think about the multiple levels of medical malpractice involved here. And I've actually talked about that in the past. Remember the story that I gave you? A friend of my father's who had an operation. Man, things were just, it was really getting more and more painful. He goes back to, he says, oh, I can see something. There's something inside of me. It wasn't a sponge. It was a tool that they had dropped and sewed up inside of him. And he went back to the doctor that had done the operation. And he opens up his shirt and says, look, here it is. And it's like poking out, right? Not poking through the skin, but it's sticking there. And so the doctor just backs up and says, That's not there, just loses it. Starts to cry, backs up. It's like, you know, my medical, I don't know if he'd had other cases like this or if one case was that negligent was going to raise his malpractice fee so high that it was going to essentially kill his practice. But he just didn't want to acknowledge it. And I said, that's what's going on with a lot of these people. It's about money. It's about their career. It's about playing along with this. They will, because they're being pressured by the hospital, they will lose their privileges if they give people real treatments like ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine. So you don't prescribe that stuff. You just pretend that this doesn't exist. You look the other way and you take the money. You take the money. Because why?
Show me the money! Jared, you better yell!
Yeah, that's what it's about. Show me the money. They're incentivizing you to kill people. It's all about the money. You know, you went to medical school so you could get this lots of money. You got lots of debt. You spend a lot of years in it. You come out with heavy debt. Now you really want that money. Got to have that money. Show me the money. In the UK, the National Health System, NHS, and again, they're not being financially incentivized by Trump to do this type of thing, but they are being incentivized because it's their career, right? And so you have patients dying after the NHS canceled appointments to remove objects that were left inside them. So they have malpractice, which, you know, anybody can make a mistake, you know. Hey, did you see that scissors anywhere or not? you might want to count all the tools when you get finished. I think that's standard procedure, isn't it? I mean, don't you go through and do an inventory of the tools before, during, and after? Maybe you should make that part of the practice. I think I would suggest that to them. But anyway, patients died after the NHS canceled appointments to remove objects that they'd left inside of them during an operation, says a University of Oxford study, into indirect COVID deaths. Indirect. So they're actually not adding these to COVID. I mean, it could have been COVID. They could have had a PCR test and then sewed up scissors inside of the person and then told them, no, you can't come back because you don't have a positive COVID test now. And then they could have died. So it could have been related to COVID, you know, within 30 days. Researchers uncovered 23 reports of coroners in England and Wales, because we don't usually do a coroner's report on people who die. Typically, you know, unless foul play is suspected or, you know, you sewed up tools in them, who found deaths that occurred which were largely preventable. In two instances, patients died when the medical equipment was left inside them. And then the operations to take them out were canceled because, you know, we've got to keep the beds open for COVID just in case somebody comes in. A further two people lost their lives after being wrongly diagnosed with COVID via remote telehealth appointments, because that's what we should be doing. We should all just, you know, don't get close to the practitioners. You know, don't get within proximity of these individuals. You know, they could get sick and we need to have them here. So we'll just do this via Zoom. And then they get the wrong diagnosis. Two more died from medication errors linked to the pandemic response. Maybe they got remdesivir. Yeah, check that liver damage. You know, if you get on remdesivir, Mr. Liver Damage may be visiting you later in life. One man who was admitted to the hospital with a fractured hip caught COVID after being placed in a bay where it was circulating. An elderly woman was wrongly diagnosed with the virus and put into isolation. where she had a fatal fall while she was on her own. Three more people committed suicide after being unable to access help. Yeah, we don't count the people who committed suicide. We don't count the people who fall all the time. You know, that is a health risk for the elderly. It's unlikely that the number of preventable death reports relating to COVID-19 will increase in the coming months, they said. And the years, owing to the backlog of inquests, or it is likely, as well as the time that takes for an inquest to conclude. See, they don't know what people have died of. They're just like they're doing the clinical diagnosis to see whether you have COVID because their tests don't work. They're also not doing autopsies to determine what you died from. And again, I'll say it again, the heart attacks that you're seeing with these young, healthy athletes after they get vaccinated, the only reason they're talking about that and talking about it only with young people is because they can slough it off as something that was a pre-existing condition or a comorbidity or something like that with anybody who is not an 18-year-old football player. But nobody's going to believe a lie that's that absurd. But they will believe the lie that it is rare. They will believe the lie that it is just a rare coincidence. The majority of COVID patients in the hospital may have been admitted for other ailments before testing positive. This is also coming from the NHS. Over 50% of COVID patients in England tested positive only after being hospitalized. And I have personal experience about this, too. Friends and family. I have a friend who said he had family members, elderly, totally paranoid from watching CNN, stay isolated, wear the mask, don't go anywhere. And he got sick with something else. They had to take him to the hospital. They tested him. It was negative. They tested him again. It was negative. They tested him again. They tested him four times with the thing up his nose. And finally, he got, even though the fourth test was still negative, he got a severe sinus infection from that. We also had a friend who went in, again, for something that was mechanical, like a hip. And they kept testing that person until they got a positive test. You know, because, hey, it's kind of like spinning the roulette wheel, you know. And if it comes up on the red marker, these people get a $13,000 bonus. So it is like playing roulette for them. They want to play that game. They keep putting the, you know, instead of putting a coin into the slot machine, they keep sticking a swab up your nose. And eventually it pays off. Over 50% of COVID patients in England tested positive only after being hospitalized. Over 50%. And they kept doing it, I'm sure. Only 44% of those classified as COVID patients had tested positive for the virus by the time they were admitted to the hospital. They're going in for other reasons, and evidently they had something that was more serious than having tools sewn up in them in a previous visit to the hospital. Despite broad public testing for the disease, an incredible 56% of COVID hospitalizations involved already admitted patients who were administered routine COVID tests after they got there for something else. 43% of COVID-positive patients were identified within 2 days of admission, while 13% were flagged in the following days and weeks. Which reminds me, you know, the German word for hospital is Krankenhaus. Translated means sick house. That's where you go to get sick. Now, that used to always be the case, and it is now the case once again because of politically and financially incentivized malpractice. The leaked data points to the possibility that the virus may only have a minor or negligible role in many hospitalizations blamed on coronavirus. This is an article, by the way, if you want to look it up, RT. This is an RT article. The leaked figures, they're leaked, also suggest that a large number of COVID hospitalizations are the result of transmissions that are not social, meaning that the healthcare facilities, rather than restaurants, stadiums, schools, and other public venues, may be driving up infections requiring medical care. Here's an idea. Why don't we put occupation limits on hospitals? You know, forget limiting the churches to 150 people max. Let's limit the hospitals to 150 people max. That'll stop it, right? Can't have too many people in the hospitals. It's too crowded, and that's where everybody's getting sick. They're not getting sick in church or restaurants or stadiums. They're getting sick in the hospitals. He added, there's a big distinction between people admitted solely for COVID and those who are in the hospital for something else. But they have COVID in such a mild form that it was not the cause of their hospitalization. Meanwhile, as we're talking about these authoritarian Republicans who are the handmaids of big pharmaceutical companies, Lawrence Kudlow, remember Lawrence Kudlow? Yeah, this guy who talked about free markets and stuff like that till he went to the Trump administration and he found out what he really believed. Lawrence Kudlow went on the Fox Business Network channel. He was interviewed by Sarah Huckabee Sanders, you know, Mike Huckabee's daughter. She was a press secretary for Trump. And she was kind of a no-nonsense secretary. I mean, I liked the way that she handled these people. But she has now had her brain taken over by the big pharmaceutical companies. She's now become part of the body, part of the Invasion of the Body Snatcher pod group. Because she wants to be governor of Arkansas, and I guess if you want to be governor of Arkansas, you got to push the vaccines. And so she has Larry Kudlow come on, and this is what they suggest. Kudlow says Twitter and Facebook should reactivate President Trump's accounts so that he has a platform on which to encourage people to get vaccinated against COVID-19. I want you to think about this, right? I had a listener, and I'll get into that in a second. I'll tell you, he'd sent this to me Sunday, July 25th, Stephen. And he was spot on, because we see this happening right now. You still have all these people pushing 40 chess. You still have all these people like Alex and Mark Levin and Sean Hannity. You know, they love Trump because, why? Trump is an audience. The audience is money, right? They do not want to criticize anything that Trump has done. Nothing that he's done, then or now. He can continue to push this. And I see these people all the time on Gab, not so much on Twitter anymore, but all the time on Gab, that are coming in. You don't like Trump? Well, you must love Biden and all this other kind of stuff. Got to be one or the other, right? These people still don't understand what's going on. I say, give the guy the credit he wants. Come on. You love Trump. He loves his vaccines. He brags about them all the time. Just give him the credit. And, you know, I had Stephen send this. He goes, I've come to the conclusion. This is the listener, Stephen. He sent this letter on Sunday. He said, I've come to the conclusion that Donald Trump participated in and conspired with Big Tech to suspend and remove his accounts. Why? He said, since 2016, Trump has conditioned his supporters to take anything from mainstream media as fake news. We do know that Trump is heavily involved in a psychological warfare operation using people like Jones and Flynn, Alex Jones, Michael Flynn, to counter Trump's push for vaccines. Had Trump continued to stay on these social media platforms, any tweets that he put out in opposition of the vaccines would have pissed off his handlers, but also Big Pharma, because then the pharmaceutical companies would have had to use more talking heads like Fauci to convince 80 million people to take the injections. He said, I have had discussions with Trump supporters, one recently, about how Trump is advocating for big pharmaceutical companies and continually promotes his vaccines. They're Trump shots, folks. I even included links to mainstream media outlets where Trump was pushing his supporters to get vaccinated. The response I got was, that's all fake news. Right? You got a link to Trump who is saying something in one of these marathon Kool-Aid Jonestown rallies that he has, right? And InfoWars won't put up the quotes that he says about how proud he is of the big, wonderful vaccines. They're great. Nobody else could have done anything like this. It's like World War II all over again. They won't put up that stuff. If he's a little bit hesitant, says, well, you know, they're really, really great, but, you know, I don't know if we need to do this for young kids or not. I don't know. Maybe we should. Should I fire Fauci? Should I? Maybe I'll think about that. Whatever. They put that stuff up, right? And that's why Trump does that. He says everything to please everybody. And so the New York Times pulls out the part that they like, which is him pushing the vaccines, and InfoWars pulls out the part that they like, which is Trump skeptical of whether or not we should use vaccines for young kids. I don't know. Maybe we'll do it. You tell me. You're the expert, right? And so they can all have their way. But see, if Trump was on social media, and that's the point Steve was making, if he was on social media, it would be a big problem for them, wouldn't it? Because he'd be right there in your face pushing his big, beautiful Trump shots. And so he said, when I sent this stuff, you know, and they put this in there because it's fake news, because, you know, InfoWars didn't report it and Breitbart didn't report it. And, you know, the rest of these Trump fan sites, Trump fanboys, they don't report this. It's only reported by the New York Times. So they don't believe that he said it at the rally because it's part of a 2-hour speech that he gave. So he says, so the Trump supporters, if they even believe that he said it, they believe that he said it just to fool the other guys. He's not lying to me. He's lying to CNN and these other people, right? And he said, I listened to you ask the question why Trump didn't move to other platforms like Gab, and this is what I came up with. Well, with Gab, it was also Jared Kushner who said, well, you know, Jab is anti-Jewish, and so we can't, you know, that type of anti-Israel. So, you know, we're not going to go to Gab. But I think it's deeper than that. And so you look at Larry Kudlow. Larry Kudlow goes on with Sarah Huckabee Sanders, and the two of them are saying, yeah, we need to get Trump back onto social media. And if the establishment that, you know, we want to be a part of, if they're smart, because, you know, the agenda is, it doesn't, nothing matters other than getting everybody vaccinated. Everything has to take a back seat to that. No treatments allowed, nothing, but everybody's got to get vaccinated. That's the one thing that's got to happen. You know, there's nothing that's important in 20. We could have the supply chain melting down everywhere. We could have inflation, hyperinflation just around the corner. Nothing matters. Let's get everybody vaccinated. That's the only thing that matters. And so Sanders wrote an op-ed piece, Sarah Huckabee Sanders, encouraging people in Arkansas to get vaccinated. She said, President Joe Biden should give Trump credit for the vaccine because he said it could encourage vaccine-hesitant Americans to get it. That's what she said, rather. She said, I think one of the things that, frankly, President Biden and Vice President Harris can do to encourage people is to frankly admit that they were wrong when they cast doubt on Operation Warp Speed at the very beginning. This is Sarah Huckabee Sanders. She's looking for a place at the table, place at the table at Davos, Bilderberg, Club of Rome, Congress, presidency, whatever. Give the president and his team and his administration credit for producing and helping carry through a safe and effective vaccine. I think that could make a big difference, and I'd love to see them take that step, encourage people across the country in that way. I think that's one of the more fruitful things that could take place. So that was her op-ed piece. Then Larry Kudlow said, I think President Biden should go to President Trump and ask him to help. President Trump has been out there unambiguously saying, get the vaccine, get the shot. And that's going to help solve this temporarily, I think, Delta strain. Furthermore, Sarah, said Larry Kudlow, I think that these media tech companies like Twitter and Facebook should put his account back into operation so he can appeal to the entire country to get the vaccination. And literally the rest of the world. Because everybody focuses on him, and now is the time to do it. That's right. The Trump shot. The shot that was sent around the world. And the shots that, if President Trump says to take it, we'll all just drink the Kool-Aid, right? Exactly. Children's Health Defense Fund and RFK Jr. understand what this is about. How the CDC, how the NIH pull in millions from licensing deals. That's exactly what they're doing.
Show me the money! Jared, you better yell! Show me the money!
How do they get the money? Let's show you the money here. Let's show you the money. The NIH, the Office of Technology Transfer, the OTT, plays a strategic role in supporting patenting and licensing for inventions that emerge from laboratories at the NIH and at the CDC. In a win-win business model, the NIH routinely grants technology licenses, both exclusive and non-exclusive, to the private sector for use or for commercialization of its inventions. And those licenses then are driving billions of dollars in royalties back into the NIH coffers. You know what this reminds me of? This is the China model. All of this is the China model. If you want to do business in China, what do you do? You find somebody and the Chinese Communist Party, and you give them a financial stake in the business that you want to do. If you're a pharmaceutical company and you want to get your drug approved, what do? You find some people and you find a way to give them a financial stake in your patented medicines at the NIH or at the CDC or at the FDA. It's exactly the kind of crony capitalism and corruption and economic fascism that we see in China, isn't it? Exactly the China system. You know, you go to China, that's a big part of the problem. GM would go in and set up a car factory. They would redesign the car for the Chinese market, which means that instead of it being a great big American car, it'd be a scaled-down car because the streets are so crowded. Just amazing to see how crowded the streets are. When we were there, most of the time we spent was in a city called Nanning, and never even seen it on a Chinese map before because it's not one of the bigger cities, but it had more people than New York City. Not as many roads. And then, of course, in the roads, you had people with rickshaws. You had people with carts that had bales of hay that were, you know, 20 feet high, teetering, going back and forth. And then you had all the people in the cars honking at each other. Yeah, it was kind of a situation, wasn't it? But when you look at the China price, and again, they downsized the car. GM designed a special car for that market that would kind of fit a little bit better in that chaos and wouldn't use as much fuel. And they had to partner with people in the Chinese Communist government. And lo and behold, about a month before they rolled out their finished product, there turned up a car that was exactly like the one that they had designed, but it was made by a wholly owned Chinese company that had stolen their design and built it and gotten to market a month or two before they did. The Chinese price is based on currency manipulation, it's based on slave labor, and it is based on piracy and theft. It is based on a corrupt crony capitalist government, and we're close to that, pretty much right there. In fiscal year 2020 alone, aggregated data for NIH and CDC show that the agencies collected $63.4 million in royalty revenue. Yeah, the CDC is also a 501c3 corporation. You want to tell me it's a government agency? It's about as much of a government agency as the Federal Reserve is federal. Under federal law, a portion of licensing royalties revert to the NIH to support undefined mission-related activities, quote-unquote. Another portion goes directly to the agency's inventors, who are allowed to collect up to $150,000 in payments per year for their inventions. Same holds true at CDC. Scientists like to frame these payments as positive incentives. Oh, yeah. Incentives for corruption. How much do you think Fauci is making off of some of these deals? So he's not just the highest paid federal employee. He's probably dipping his beak in a lot of different ponds. Universities, too, receive royalties when they market patented technologies. Nearly 25 years ago, a University of Michigan biologist complained that two California universities, both public and private, were using royalties as a mechanism to covertly fleece taxpayers. The professor explained that, quote, ordinary people had already paid through their tax dollars for the basic research that gave rise to the patents. He argued taxpayers should not have to continue paying the universities many times over the original investment through patent royalties. In 2005, an explosive AP, Associated Press, scoop showed large numbers of agency scientists at the NIH's explicit instructions were routinely failing to disclose royalty payments, either to taxpayers or to participants in taxpayer-funded clinical trials who were obligingly testing out the NIH's royalty-generating experimental treatments. You hear that? So they're carrying out the royalty-generating experimental treatments for the NIH. They are then collecting money, and the NIH is telling them, don't tell anybody. Now, people at the end, it is absolutely unbelievable, isn't it, that the NIH under Fauci, under Francis Collins, would continue with gain-of-function research and that they would shovel money through shell corporations when they were prohibited from doing it so they could keep it going. They would never do anything like that, right? Not the people who did this type of thing. Among the scientists scolded by the AP for testing products for which they secretly received royalties was Dr. Anthony Fauci.
Show me the money! Jerry,
yeah, that's right. Show me the money, Tony. Show me the money. I know you got it there. Just show it to us. Come on. You've got to be proud of it. You know, just celebrate the fact that you pull the wool over everybody's eyes. Finally, I'll finish with this for the medical stuff, and then we've got something else I want to talk about in terms of the LGBT. You know, there's an article talking about how, and I said this a long time ago, so it really got my attention when I saw the headline. It said the L's are at war with the T's and the LGBT. It's a civil war in Sodom and Gomorrah. Okay, so we'll talk about that, and now they're coming after everybody else as well. But this comment from a Subscribestar supporter said, one thing they never mentioned about the jabs, but Pamela Acker brought it up on a LifeSite interview, and that is the finite resources factor. Now, here's what she means by that. If our cells are being hijacked to manufacture these deadly spike proteins, and they are, that's what they bragged about. They said, we can do this right now, President Trump, because all we need is a code sequence, and we can just start sending that code sequence in your body, and your body can start manufacturing it right now. We don't have to wait. You know, if it was, if we were going to guess which strain of flu we were going to vaccinate everybody for, we would have to start preparing that. We'd have to grow that and so forth. And there'd be a long lead time to manufacture that. But we're going to turn your bodies into a manufacturing facility. Oh, okay. That sounds reasonable, right? How fast can you do that? So she asks, okay, if your body is busy manufacturing these toxic spike proteins, then what other processes are being suppressed while the mRNA is doing its own thing? Do you suppose that some of these hijacked processes that have been pushed out of the way might be important to the ongoing health of our cells? Well, I guess not, according to the experts. Now, that's a very good question, and it is something that I have kind of tangentially touched on in the past when I said, if you stop and think about this, it's hijacking your cells, and it's forcing your cells to create something that is alien. And, of course, one of the reasons that viruses can be deadly is because they make your body cells, instead of reproducing normal cells that they need, because your body cells are always dying and being replaced, So instead of replacing the cells that you need, your body starts not replacing those, but instead putting in the spike proteins, which is what they're talking about here, the finite resources issue. But then there's another issue involved in that, and that is that it looks kind of like cancer, doesn't it? I mean, you know, with cancer, you have, my sister died of renal carcinoma, kidney cancer, and what happens is your body starts producing tumors all over your body with trying to reproduce these aberrant kidney cells. They do it in your lungs, they do it in your bones, they do it in all these different places. And so I said, you know, and there's a lot of overlap between viruses and cancer. There's a lot of viruses that have been linked to eventually causing cancer. Why? Because, again, they're hijacking your body and causing it to produce something that your body cannot handle and does not need, and something that doesn't belong there, in the case of the protein spikes, is actually very harmful, and then it keeps reproducing in this chain reaction type of thing. So I said, how does this work out? Because, you know, you're producing this, you're hijacking the body's reproductive methods just like a virus. There's a chain reaction type of thing that's happening here, isn't there? Just like a virus, and just like a cancer. And it's displacing the healthy cells at the same time. I have a lot of questions. We'll be right back.
The Common Man. They created Common Core to dumb down our children. They created Common Pass to track and control us. Their Commons Project to make sure the commoners own nothing. And the communist future. They see the common man as simple, unsophisticated, ordinary.
but each of us has worth and dignity created in the image of God. That is what we have in common. That is what they want to take away. Their most powerful weapons are isolation, deception, intimidation. They desire to know everything about us while they hide everything from us. It's time to turn that around and expose what they want to hide. Please share the information and links you'll find at thedavidknightshow.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. If you can't support us financially, please keep us in your prayers. TheDavidKnightShow.com.
Sometimes your day needs a little smoothing. Check out the Jazz Channel at APSradio.com and the APS Radio app and leave the stress behind.
All right, and again, thanks to APS Radio for carrying the audio live. And also, we're on aftermarket.fm. I was on last night with Clyde Lewis, and we were talking about all things Great Reset in Chinese last night. It was a late night. That's why I'm kind of giddy today, I think. And you can also find the links to the unabridged show in audio format that's stored as part of the podcast. You'll find the links to Podbean as well as to Spreaker. And, of course, they push out from those two sites to iTunes, to iHeart, to all the different podcast formats. So you can find it going directly there. And those sites, I think, have some apps. Or you can go to, you know, use the iTunes to download it, or Google or whatever. So we have all these different places that you can find it. And again, where you can find the video archives on the four different channels that we have at BitChute, Rumble, Odyssey, and YugeTube, UGE. That's Utah Gun Exchange. I think it's a great, it's a clever name they came up with. And they're based in America. So you can find all those four different places. And we not only put up the unabridged show, but we also put up excerpts that we take out anywhere from 2 minutes to about 20 minutes. And you'll also find out how you can support the show. And I just want to say again, thank you to everyone who has voluntarily supported us this last month. We were able to meet our budget. And so I want to thank all of you very much for that, for supporting us. And please continue to pass the information around. And please continue to pray for the broadcast, that God would use this to open people's eyes. When I look at what has happened this last year, it's just been so much in terms of lies and deceptions. It's just hard to believe, isn't it? So let's take a look at what is coming for us, because it is what we've seen happen this last year. We've seen in Canada especially, we've seen a lot of pastors who have been locked up, churches that have been locked down, that have been stolen. I played for you yesterday, Stephen Schellenberger, who was a filmmaker, and he was talking about how they have hundreds of thousands of dollars in fines hit up against the pastor of the church that he goes to. And he goes, so now, you know, and they've shut down the building. We can't go in the building. And so he goes, so now we have church out in this big, beautiful field. And it's really nice. Maybe we don't need a building. I don't know. Just buy a big pasture somewhere. That would make it kind of interesting and different, wouldn't it? But he said it's always a great experience. And so, you know, there's a way when things like that come our way, if we have our priorities straight and we understand what our foundation is, we can handle it. And I think one of the things that's happened this last year is that as we've seen this this ridiculous movement in the pandemic, I think it's been a wake-up time, because it rapidly accelerated persecution of churches in Canada and in other places, because we have people in America facing a lot of fines that they still have stacked up. I know that John MacArthur in L.A., they still have not let those fines go away. They've been putting money in escrow, but they haven't had to pay it. But, you know, they still have this big accumulating a mass of money that has not, you know, L.A. County is still trying to come after them for. So, and then there's a lot of pastors who have been fined. Some of them have been brought to heel. Some of them have voluntarily gone along with this. But when you look at what's happening in Canada, a lot of the hate that you've seen with Pastor Arthur Pulaski and others has already been stored up. You know, what was breaking against them during this pandemic was stored up wrath from a particular group, the LGBT. And that's been building for quite some time. And so I think, in a sense, you know, we look at what has happened this last year, and for some people, for some parents, it gave them a chance to try homeschooling that they would have been afraid to try before. It gave them a chance to see as their kids were schooling from home in a Zoom. It gave them a chance to see what the school system was like. Not what the school system was like when they went to school, but what it's like now for their kids. And it's given us a chance to see where the persecution is going to be coming from and what it's going to be like. And so all these things are really good for us. The time has come, says a writer, University Libraries, promoting a book that says homophobia will not be eradicated in the U.S. until religion is ended. And we will not have a socialist Marxist utopia until religion is ended, right? That's where these people are. The time has come for gaytheism, is how he puts it, right? Atheism, gay atheism, gaytheism. Slouching Towards Gaytheism is the book, Christianity and Queer Survival in America. The way these people look at it, they're not looking for tolerance. They do not tolerate other people. It is a religion. It is a religion just like Marxism is a religion, just like secular humanism is a religion. And they take no prisoners. And many times we find that they are far more committed to their belief system and what they want to see happen in the future than we are. You know, many times, and I'm not dogmatic about eschatology. I have people ask me this all the time. I have teachers that I read who are all over the place. There's a lot of different interpretations of the end of time as given in the Bible. And I see things that I agree with and things I disagree with all the different ones. You know, whether it's amillennialism or postmillennialism or premillennialism or the different versions of premillennialism. You know, you have pre-trib, mid-trib, post-trib. All this stuff. So I look at that and it's like, yeah, okay, I could see that. But, it's not a point that I break fellowship with on somebody. But let me tell you, the gaytheists and the Marxists and the Muslims have an eschatology. And in their eschatology, in the end, they win. And they're driven to that. They have a vision that they're going to conquer. We have a vision, for the most part, the most popular eschatology in Christian circles is that we lose. And the very minute, the last minute, you know, the helicopters come in and take us out of Saigon. That's something that's the way Doug Wilson describes it. I think that's a good description of where we are. That's not an eschatology where we win. Now, regardless of whatever your eschatology is, you need to adapt, and it was Martin Luther who is attributed as saying that if I believed that I was going to die tomorrow, or if the world was going to die tomorrow, end tomorrow, I would still plant a tree today. We need to be focused on what we're here to do, apart from our eschatology. I mean, if you got a post-millennial eschatology like Doug Wilson, you believe that, you know, you're here and you're going to conquer and, you know, it's going to be heaven on earth for a while before it's a real heaven. But either way, we should be focused on this, that we can't be stopped. Why? Because God is on our side. We should have the same focus that David did when he came up against Goliath. And so when you look at this, you need to understand what your opponents are. You need to understand that they have a vision that they're not looking to be tolerated. They demand, they're proud of what they do. They're very proud. And they demand that you celebrate, that you worship what they do. They're not interested in your tolerance, and they will not tolerate what you do. We did not draw the battle lines. We want to be open and embracing to people, and we will continue to do that. But you just need to know what their plans are. You need to know the people who have set themselves up as your enemy, slouching towards gaytheism. And, of course, he's paraphrasing Bork's book, talking about the decline of morality in our society, slouching towards Gomorrah. And so this is somebody who's proud of their Sodom and Gomorrah status and is paraphrasing it, slouching towards gaytheism. W.C. Harris, a professor at Shippenberg University in Pennsylvania, and it can be found in Writer's Library Research Guide for Christian and Religious Privilege. It's a subcategory of their Privilege and Intersectionality webpage. We are the enemy. You know, they have our pictures up on their wall, and they're throwing darts at it. They are drawing their plans, and we don't need to worry about that. We just need to understand what this is about, so we understand where the lines are drawn here. Slouching towards gaytheism brings together two intellectual traditions, the new atheism and queer theory, and it moves beyond them to offer a new voice for gay Americans and atheists alike. They will take no prisoners. They are set on the eradication of religion, especially Christianity. According to the summary, Harris also argues that, quote, attempts by liberal Christians to reconcile religion with homosexuality are either inadequate or positively dangerous. He does not want to have any tolerance at all. He thinks that tolerance by liberal Christians is dangerous. He continues, according to the author, the time has come for gaytheism, leaving religion behind in order to preserve queer dignity, rights, and lives. So it says Christian privilege in the U.S. has always been entangled with the notions of white supremacy. This gives you an idea of where these people are. Gives you an idea of their Marxist approach, their intolerance, their purging approach. This is a jihad against us by these secular humanists. We are white. We are white privileged. We are Christian supremacists and so forth. The supremacy, the privilege, all that tied together, they absolutely hate it and they seek to eradicate it. You know, when we look at what happened with Franklin Graham, for example, he was going to do a crusade like his dad used to do in the UK. And what happened was they had every single venue of their planned tour in the UK was canceled. And they refused to host the events. Why did they do it? They said it was because of Franklin Graham's views on LGBT issues. Now, did Franklin Graham come out and say, we're having a crusade against the LGBT? No, he didn't. Did he come out and say, I believe that marriage is traditional marriage between a man and a woman? No, he didn't. He didn't mention any of that. He just said, we're going to have a crusade. You know, it's a Franklin Graham crusade. And they went back in his history like they do as, you know, the cancel mob. They said, well, Franklin Graham believes in heterosexual marriage, so we're going to shut this thing down. I don't even know that Franklin Graham would have had the courage to oppose homosexual marriage, but they shut it down anyway. In a joint public apology, the Blackpool Council and the Blackpool Transport said, because they had put their ads up to advertise this was coming, they shut it down. They said, we accept that the advertisements were not in themselves offensive. In other words, they said nothing about marriage. They said nothing about the traditional Christian view of marriage, but we shut them down anyway. So they apologized. But, of course, the tour was canceled, and it wasn't just canceled in those cities where they took them to court, but it was also the judges ruled that the council, the city council, and the transport services, the people that had the signs on their buses, had to pay $34,400 in damages and another $115,000 to cover the legal costs of the festival organizers for shutting it down. Graham said this is an important moment for religious freedom in the UK. Well, yeah, but they haven't done anything at any of the other places, because it was every single place where they were going to have their event that they were shut down. This is a story from LifeSite News. A Catholic family banned from going to the farmer's market because of religious beliefs, this was in, East Lansing, Michigan. And they're being defended by the Alliance Defending Freedom. They're going to represent this family farm, Country Mills Farm, in a case against the city of East Lansing. In 2017, they prohibited its owners from attending the farmer's market there because of a 2016 Facebook post in which the father expressed his view that marriage is between one man and one woman. So they said, all right, we're going to kick you out of the farmer's market. City officials reacted by telling him they didn't want his farm at the next scheduled market the following Sunday. However, he refused to back down, and he attended the market. After he posted another pro-marriage comment, the city officials bypassed jurisdictional limits under Michigan law to craft a policy to exclude him from being able to sell at the farmer's market. He and his family sell fruit and vegetables to all interested buyers. He says he employs a variety of people, including people who identify as being part of the LGBT community. But the city refused to allow him to participate in the farmer's market unless he agreed to host same-sex weddings at his orchard. For a while, they decided they would stop hosting all weddings at their farm. However, they have since determined to hold traditional weddings, maintaining their right to deny services that contradict their religious beliefs. We're going to take a quick break because we have the people who carry us at Aftermath FM and at APS Radio have schedules. And so I think APS continues to carry it, but we're going to cut this off right now, and we'll be right back, and I'll tell you what happened. Stay with us.
Show me the money! Jerry, you better yell! Show me the money!
Has your news been censored, banned over and over again? Has vital information been held prisoner by mainstream and anti-social media? It's the duty of every thinking person to make the great escape to thedavidknightshow.com. There you'll find links to live streams, videos, audio podcasts, and support links. Live stream the show at DLive and Trovo every Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. Eastern. Videos at BitChute and YouTube. New audio podcast, The Real David Knight Show, at Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, iHeart, Spotify, and more. But even though there's a light at the end of the tunnel, without your support, the show will run out of gas. The links to support the show are at thedavidknightshow.com. Common Man. They created Common Core to dumb down our children. They created Common Pass to track and control us. Their Commons Project to make sure the commoners own nothing. And the communist future. They see the common man as simple, unsophisticated, ordinary. But each of us has worth and dignity created in the image of God. That is what we have in common. That is what they want to take away. Their most powerful weapons are isolation, deception, intimidation. They desire to know everything about us while they hide everything from us. It's time to turn that around and expose what they want to hide. Please share the information and links you'll find at thedavidknightshow.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. If you can't support us financially, please keep us in your prayers. TheDavidKnightShow.com. All right, so this is what happened to the farmer. Just to recap. We had the farmer. They sold their goods at the farmer's market at their orchard. They also had hosted weddings at their orchard. And when the city council there in East Lansing, Michigan, discovered that they were not hosting LGBT weddings, even though they had LGBT employees working at the orchard, they said, you can't sell your products at the farmer's market. For a while, They stopped hosting all weddings on the farm. And then after a while, they thought about that. And they said, no, we're going to continue to, we got a right to do this. They can't tell us that we can't sell things at the farmer's market because of our religious beliefs. And so the Alliance Defending Freedom filed a lawsuit, says the city policy violated the Constitution's guarantees of free speech, freedom of religion, and equal protection. It is asking the court to restore the farm's, quote, constitutionally protected freedoms and to prevent a violation of Michigan's laws governing cities. The suit also asked the court to halt the discriminatory city policy, to declare it unlawful, unconstitutional, and to award nominal and compensatory damages. This lawsuit simply asked the court to uphold that freedom for a Catholic farmer who should be able to sell his produce without coercion, discrimination, or intimidation by the government because of his beliefs about marriage, said the senior counsel. The city must respect Steve's constitutionally protected freedom to express his religious beliefs on social media sites without being forced to surrender his right to participate in the marketplace. This is not about the establishment of church and state, is it? Oh, yes, it is. It is exactly about the merger of church and state. What we have here is a religion of secular humanism. We have a religion of gay theism, and this is being enforced. I mean, this is really no different than if you had a majority Muslim rule at the East Lansing facility, and they were to shut down a Christian's life over that, or vice versa, if a Christian were to do that to a Muslim who was trying to sell goods in the public market because they didn't like his religion. This is the establishment of a state religion. Don't be fooled by the fact that these people say that they don't believe in God. They have their gods, and they're fiercely worshipped. And you need to understand what this is. They are absolutely intolerant. Here's another case. A designer who won't make same-sex wedding websites loses a case. And again, this is coming out of, how many times have we seen this happening in Colorado? Over and over again. As a matter of fact, the baker, Masterpiece Bakery, he won all the way to the Supreme Court. As soon as he comes back, instead of, because he wouldn't make a gay wedding cake, he's got a lawyer who thinks he's a woman, and he wants the baker, demands of the baker, and he was trolling the baker all through the gay wedding cake thing. And so he comes back and he says, I want you to make me a traniversary cake. And he didn't call it that. That's what I call it. To say this is the anniversary of my deciding that I'm a woman. And the guy said, I don't do that. I do custom cakes, but I'm not going to make a cake for something that I don't believe in, you know, any more than if you went to a Jewish baker or deli or something and said, you know, make me something that says, I don't know, Hitler is a hero. Or there's no such thing as a Holocaust. Let's do that. No such thing as a Holocaust. You make that for me. Well, I'm not going to make that for you. Same thing. And so this tranny lawyer then files a complaint with the same people in Colorado, same government bureaucrats, and they start this whole process again. And so now he's going to go all the way back through the courts again because of all this. And now here is a person with websites in Colorado. A 3-judge panel of the 10th Circuit Court of Appeals in Denver denied Lori Smith's attempt to overturn a lower court ruling throwing out her legal challenge. They said, this is an organization called Lambda. Lambda Legal Senior Counsel. These are the people that are involved with the LGBT. This is the Lambda variant, okay? it's about protecting LGBTQ people and their families from being subjected to slammed doors, service refusals, and public humiliation in countless places. But it's not really about that, is it? It's about eradication of people that they disagree with. Because this is allied with all of this Marxist cancel culture, whether it's about race or whether it's about LGBT or white privilege or Christian privilege, it's all the same approach because that's what these people are. They're authoritarian tyrants who seek to overthrow the fundamental principles of our society. They do not seek to have a tolerant society. They don't want that at all. So don't be fooled by that. Any more than these people who are censoring people everywhere because they say you hate people, they're not doing that because you're hateful. They're doing that because they hate you. They're full of hate for you. So anyway, this was a situation. She designs websites, and they want to be able to force them in Colorado under the Anti-Discrimination Act to make websites for people that you don't agree with. We've seen this for bakers, for photographers, for website design and so forth. Why is it then? Then the courts, and it's these same courts in places like Colorado and other places that identify themselves as liberal, why are they saying then that these places of business can force you to get a vaccine in order to have any service at their place? Why is it these businesses like Twitter and Facebook and Gulag can force you to obey their speech codes? Why is that? Because they're not even just public accommodations. They're not just even corporations. They are. Their business model is the public square. Why is it that public accommodations only apply on one side of the equation? Well, you know why that is, for the same reason that you see what's happening there in January 6th issue. And I'll give you one more case. Ex-football coach in a court fight after kneeling to pray on a field points out the obvious problem. This is coming from the Western Journal. When is it not okay to kneel on a football field? As we see the football field, or the soccer field, if you will, the women's soccer field, where they're kneeling, where all these other people are kneeling. You even have people from other countries kneeling in opposition to the American flag. And so when you're kneeling to pray, that's when it's not allowed. Joe Kennedy, a Marine veteran, a former football coach at a high school in Washington State, according to the First Liberty Institute, which is representing him, he was fired over a silent, listen to this, a silent 15-second prayer after high school football games. He takes a knee, rather, if you take a knee for any liberal cause, you will be celebrated. But just don't take a knee for God, right? Look at how they came after Tim Tebow. They hated him in New York. Really hated him. But this is a guy who is not doing that after, but he's doing it at the end of the game. Listen to what he said, why he did it. He said, it all started out, I was thinking, it's just a big misunderstanding that we, could totally work through this. And it became very evident that the school just wanted to remove absolutely any presence of religion whatsoever. And he said, and then I realized I could only go so far to accommodate that. He said, when you draw the line in the sand and they say you have to pick between your faith and your job, that's when I knew it was really serious and this became something real to me. Before he even coached his first game, the Marine Corps veteran turned football coach made a commitment to God that he would give thanks after every game, win or lose, for the opportunity to be a football coach. And he would thank God for his players. So after his very first football game back in 2008, Coach Kennedy waited until all the players cleared the field. Then he went out by himself, took a knee, and silently thanked God for his players. And he continued to do this after every game for 7 years. No students complained. No coaches, no parents ever complained about it. In fact, it was a compliment that started the problem. After a school administrator expressed gratitude for his leadership, including the example that he was setting through prayerfulness, the school district investigated. See? The school district. And this is why I keep saying, you've got to get out of the, we've got to shut the schools down, folks. We got to defund the schools. You want to talk about separation of church and state? That isn't going to happen until you separate education from state. We need to defund the schools. Schools, government-run schools, are not necessary for education. As a matter of fact, they suppress it. They pervert it. And so we have to get, if we don't want to raise useful idiots for a Marxist state, we have to get rid of the school. And of course, they turn them into their hateful Marxist brigade. So, in September 2015, in a letter to Kennedy, the superintendent described the results of the inquiry. The letter noted that Kennedy's prayers and his practice of providing an inspirational talk at midfield following the completion of the game with members of both teams. He said the letter said that his talks had, quote, overtly religious references in them. Every activity has been voluntary, they said. Nevertheless, as I believe you understand, both activities would likely be found to violate the First Amendment's Establishment Clause, exposing the district to significant risk of liability. Well, that's not true. But let me tell you, this is voluntary. When they grab your kids and start lecturing them about CRT or about Marxism or about Project 1619 or about atheism in general, that's not voluntary for your kids. And they can put a lot of pressure to bear on kids, and kids have a difficult time responding to that. It is, in many cases, deliberate intimidation. First Liberty lawyers responded with a letter of their own, arguing that the First Amendment forbids religious activity that is sponsored by the government, but it protects religious activity that is initiated by individuals acting privately, as was the case with Coach Kennedy. They said no reasonable observer could conclude that the football coach who waits until the game is over and the players have left the field, then walks to midfield to say a short, private, silent, personal prayer, is speaking on the behalf of the state. Quite the opposite. He is engaged in private religious expression upon which the state may not infringe. Nevertheless, the school district ordered him to stop praying after the game, then sent a letter to him announcing that he was immediately suspended, may not participate in any capacity in future games. They suspended him the day before the final varsity football game of the season, and then they refused to renew his contract for the following year, terminating his coaching career. He sued for religious discrimination, but a federal district court dismissed the suit, and that dismissal was upheld on appeal by the Ninth Circuit Court. Then they took it to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court declined. But you had four justices, Clarence Thomas, Samuel Alito, Neil Gorsuch, and Brett Kavanaugh, who urged the Ninth Circuit Court to reconsider the decision due to serious concerns. Notice whose name is missing there? Amy Barrett. She did not sign on to that. So it only takes four judges to say we're going to hear the case. I don't know why they didn't do it. Instead, those four judges decided that they would just push this back down to the Ninth Circuit Court. The Ninth Circuit Court looked at it and said, no, we're going to stick with our initial decision. So is he lost? No, he's not lost. He's lost his job. He's lost his livelihood. He's lost his appeal through a politicized, corrupt judicial system that doesn't care about the Constitution or individual liberty or the First Amendment. But he is not lost. And I tell you his story because I tell you that we are going to have these types of situations. And we're going to have the commitment to do what is right, regardless of the pressures, regardless of the penalties that are going to be put against us, because there are going to be pressures, there are going to be penalties, and we're not always going to win the fight in this life. Coach Kennedy understands that. You need to understand that as well. Thank you.
The Common Man. They created Common Core to dumb down our children. They created Common Pass to track and control us. Their Commons Project to make sure the commoners own nothing. And the communist future. They see the common man as simple, unsophisticated, ordinary. But each of us has worth and dignity created in the image of God. That is what we have in common. That is what they want to take away. Their most powerful weapons are isolation, deception, intimidation. They desire to know everything about us while they hide everything from us. It's time to turn that around and expose what they want to hide. Please share the information and links you'll find at thedavidknightshow.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. If you can't support us financially, please keep us in your prayers. thedavidknightshow.com.